Well, good morning. It's time for another Radio Vault. And we are listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. It's WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. Well, what's on tap for you today, you may ask? We have got a virtual cornucopia of comedy programs for you. We're going to kick it off in just a moment with Eddie Cantor. Time to Smile. It's from the Time to Smile run from the Eddie Cantor series. We'll be hearing a show from October 30th, 1940. We will follow that by a couple of Jack Benny shows. One where he actually features Eddie Cantor as guest. Those guys were all friends back in those days. From the Hollywood Canteen, we'll be hearing the Jack Benny Show from 1941. And then another later episode. Jack is unhappy about what happened when he appeared on the Quiz Kids show. The Quiz Kids show was basically a game show featuring some really bright kids, all right? And as a gag, Jack Benny decided, well, maybe I should make an appearance. Well, it kind of backfired, and we'll hear more about that. We also have later on today the CBS Radio Workshop. And the CBS Radio Workshop was actually kind of the same as the earlier Columbia Workshop. CBS Radio Workshop came in the mid-1950s, whereas the Columbia Workshop came in the early 1940s. We'll be hearing Subways Are for Sleeping from the CBS Radio Workshop. That's from August 3rd of 1956. 1956 was a very good year, and we won't go into why, but and speaking of quiz shows, we've got the episode where Fibber McGee is running a quiz show. And that episode aired the same year that Orson Welles aired The War of the Worlds in 1938. Fibber McGee and Company. Molly was ill during that time, so why don't we do that right now? Going back May 31st, 1938, Fibber McGee and Company.
The makers of Johnson's Wax present Fibber McGee and Company with Billy Mills Orchestra. The show opens with Let's Break the Good News. Show that questions and answers are all the rage, and you, the listener, can test your knowledge with true or false or a musical college. or get yourself out on a limb with Mr. Quiz or Professor Jim. Everyone's doing it, why shouldn't we? So we turn you over to Fibber McGee.
Thank you, Mr. Trout, or Mr. Wilcox. Now, folks, Harpo is right. Tonight we try out a new question and answer program, which we call, So You Think You're Smart, eh? In which the winner receives a grand prize of $25.
Excuse me, please, sir. Is you going to call folks out of the audience and going to give the lucky winner $25 in cash?
You're right, Sil. Hey, where are you going, Sil?
I'm going to go and sit in the audience, please.
Hey, Harpo.
Yes?
Listen, when you award the prizes, my cousin Rollo is sitting in the front row there, Harpo. And Rollo could use the money.
Did you tip him off that this was going to be a question and answer show?
Why, Harpo? Why, the idea. Are you accusing me of... Why, Harpo?
Then what's he doing with that encyclopedia on his lap?
Well, what do you know about that? Rollo must be pressing a flower. Now, folks, I'll step down among the stooges, or the audience, and select the contestant.
Say, pick me, Mr. McGee, will you?
Now, don't be nervous, folks. Remember, the winner gets $25, and each losing contestant gets a can of Johnson's Glow Coat to make him a little brighter. Now, this is all in fun, and, well, how about you, Bud? You willing to enter the contest?
Yes, sir, I sure am.
Fine. What is your name, please?
Don't you remember me, please, sir? Billy Watson.
Shh. Don't spoil the illusions, Hill. Silly Watson, eh? Address?
Wistful Vista, please.
What is your occupation, Mr. Watson?
The what?
I says, what do you do?
I answer the question and get the $25.
Never mind. Now, that gentleman over there, will you be a contestant in our So You Think You're Smart, eh, quiz?
Oh, sure. To me, very quick on Clicker for answer question, yes.
And your name, please?
It's a Gooey Fooey. It's a Adless Wishful Visher and a Profession a Lonely Man.
Well, that's fine, Mr. Fooey. And remember, not too much starch in your answers. Now, how about you, Bud? You want to be a contestant?
Hey!
I says you want to enter the contest?
Why not, Johnny? What can I lose?
$25.
Whoopee! How do I lose it, Johnny, in cash?
You betcha, old-timer. Now, let me see. Need another one here. How about you, sis?
Oh, no, I couldn't really. Oh, I'd be so embarrassed.
Oh, come on now. What's your name, sis?
Gloria Twerp.
Gloria Twerp?
Uh-huh.
Where do you live, Gloria?
Mudbath, Oklahoma.
Mudbath, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
You visiting in our city?
Oh, yes, I am.
Well, how do you like it?
Well, as I always say, I like to come here to live, but I wouldn't care to visit here.
I see. And what is your profession, Miss Twerp? It is Miss Twerp, isn't it?
Why, yes. Why?
Well, single girls are better at answering questions. Married women is better at asking them. Well, thanks, Miss Twerp. Now, as we have to have one alternate, I'll ask this gentleman. What is your name, sir?
Billy Mills.
Billy Mills. Billy Mills. I've heard that name somewhere. Where are you from, Mr. Mills?
Flint, Michigan.
Oh, Flint, eh? Well, that's a good thing. We do this the hard way. Now, here is your question, Mr. Mills. What you going to play?
Sweet Sue.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mills. The right answer is Tippy Tin. Go right ahead, Billy. think you're smart, eh? Now, folks, I'll take just a moment to select the rest of the contestants. How about you, madam? Would you care to enter the contest?
Oh, dear. I don't know.
Well, come on, sis. Don't be bashful. What's your name, please?
Mrs. Wilhelmina Fling.
Where do you live, Mrs. Fling?
Buttercup, Wyoming. That's way up in the mountains.
Fine. I always wanted to meet a genuine Highland Fling. You a housewife, Mrs. Fling?
Is this a lead-in for a glow coat commercial?
No, it ain't.
Well, then, yes, I'm a housewife.
Thank you. Now, this gentleman over here, will you enter the contest, Bud?
Sure, Fizzer. I will be very enthusiastic about being a contestant, I'm thinking.
Well, that's nice. Will you tell the audience your name, Nick?
I'm being Nicholas Dimitrios Papadopoulos Iorios Apaskatis Pythagoras Agathikis Dipopoulos at your service.
Well, thank you, Mr. At your service. And now...
No, Dipopoulos is being the name, please. At your service is only being a metaphonical expression, which is meaning ask me for something and try and get it.
Oh, all right, Mr. Dipopoulos. What is your business, please?
Restaurants. Menu for today is being vegetable soup, roast beef, tables for ladies, rice puddings, open all nights, peach pies, and not responsive for hats and coats.
And all stuff like that there. Well, I need one more contestant now. How about you, Bud? You look like you knew a lot of wrong answers. Your name, please.
Rollo McGee, Colonel.
Oh. Rollo McGee, huh? Yeah. Well, now, ain't that a coincidence? Listen, Rollo, lay off of that cousin stuff. You want folks to think this contest is fixed?
What do you mean you ain't going to give your own kin folks a chance to make $25 cousin service?
Quiet. Now, that gives us enough contestants, folks. Remember, no coaching from the audience, and wrong answers will get the bell. You ready? All right. Now, the first question. You there, old-timer.
Very flicker, Johnny.
Okay. If you were born down in Mexico and came home suddenly to find your wife alone with an enchilada, would you run for the shotgun, call the police, or reach for the sodium bicarbonate?
Hey!
Oh, dear. Well, maybe I better make it easier. Listen, Junior, if I had an avocado, I couldn't make any impression on it with my teeth. True or false?
The statement or the teeth, Johnny?
These problems are supposed to be mental, not dental.
That's pretty good, Johnny, but that ain't the way I heard it. The way I heard it, one feller says to the other feller, "See," says, "I see where this American golfer Yates gave Bobby Jones credit for helping him win the British Amateur." "Yeah," says the other feller, "that's the way to get things in England. Ask a Bobby." Matter, Johnny, wrong answer.
Sit down, Junior. Now, this next question is... Now, the next question is for Mr. Rollo McGee.
Why, sure, because now I'm all ready. Make it easy there, son.
Well, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. What day of the week did I leave out?
Memorial Day.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. McGee. Memorial Day ain't a day of the week.
Well, no, it surely is, too. It's Monday.
Well, I mentioned Monday.
Well, sure you did. That's a day of the week, ain't it, cousin?
Well, yes, but I mean, you didn't... That is... Oh, listen, here's an easy one. How much is two and two?
Two and two? Well, no, I hate so much for doing sums, cousin, but it's five, ain't it?
I'm sorry, Mr. McGee. It's only four. I'm afraid you had one too many.
Well, now, cousin, I ain't catched a drop since I come to town. I don't...
I meant in adding two and two, you had the... let it go. Now, folks, while the judges are trying to make sense out of the scores so far, we will call on one of the alternates, Mr. Clark Dennis, to answer a couple of questions. Mr. Dennis?
Hello, Fibber. What's up?
Listen, Clark, tonight we're putting on a question and answer show.
I know that. Haven't I been sitting right here listening to it?
Quiet, Clark. I just says that for the benefit of those tuning in late.
The benefit goes to those who tuned out early.
I'm afraid you ain't got into the spirit of this thing, Dennis. What you want to sing?
Let me whisper.
Fine. Go ahead, Clark.
Here where skies can be gray, there is a place I'm thinking of, a perfect setting for two in love. In its amorous atmosphere, you will soon hear me sing. Let me whisper I love you while we are dancing and the moon's aglow.
Clark, that was great. And now, back to the contest. So you think you're smart, eh? Now, folks, before we go into the second half of our question and answer opera, we want to thank at this time all them there who have refrained from sending in questions from all parts of the United States. This thing is complicated enough as it is. Who's the first contestant in this round, Harpo?
Mr. Gooey Fooey.
Fine. Right up here to the microphone, Mr. Gooey Fooey.
Okay. To me, all ready for answer question.
All right, Gooey, here's your question. True or false?
True.
Wait a minute. I ain't asked the question yet.
False.
Don't be in such a hurry.
What's the money, you?
Now, here's your question. What is a naval collier? A sea dog, a vessel for carrying fuel to battleships, or a collar to be worn around the waist?
Let me see. It's a battle dog, a navy belt, and a sea dog. That's a very funny question. Oh, yes, you very smell comedian. Yes.
You mean swell comedian, I think.
You think.
I don't know what Professor Quiz does in a case like this. Oh, well. Who's the next victim, or the next contestant, Mr. Wilcox?
Miss Twerp, Fibber. Step right up, Miss Twerp.
All right.
And now then, Twerpy. Tell us, what is a palindrome?
A palindrome?
Yeah.
A palindrome is a word or sentence which reads the same backwards or forwards, such as Napoleon's statement, "Able was I ere I saw Elba." And then there's another one that goes, "Madam, I'm Adam."
Why, sis, you're absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. That's more like it. How'd you ever guess it, sis?
I was here for rehearsal.
Next time we have a show like this, we'll rehearse with blank pages. Now, the next question is, well, Granddad, you're next.
Hey!
I says you're the next contestant.
Okay, Johnny, what's this one? True or false, or who am I?
Neither one, Junior, and quit interrupting. Now, this is a scientific question. Tell us, what is an electron?
Hey!
What is an electron?
Oh, an electron. Well, Johnny, that's what the Republicans have been losing every 4 years lately.
That's wrong. I'll give you another chance. Now then, what is alliteration?
Alliteration, Johnny?
Yeah.
That's when a dog has a lot of pups, ain't it?
Dear, dear. I'll give you a hint about alliteration. And I know a lot about words, too. I was the most literate boy in school, considering that I was ill so much. Illiterate McGee, I was known as in them days. Illiterate McGee, the inimitable, incorrigible instigator of incredible inquiries, inaugurating an insipid and incompetent index of intensely idiotic information, invaded with an impish itch to irritate intellectual individuals by issuing inane interrogations, including no inkling of intelligence, and immortalized as the impresario of insufferable ignoramuses from the ill-lighted igloos of immense Iceland to the interesting Indians who inhabit the interior of Indianapolis. I knew I shouldn't have broken in that new plate tonight. Now then, old-timer, what would you call that?
I'd call that a lot of baloney, Johnny.
Oh, is that so? Well, that was alliteration, Junior.
It was, eh?
You betcha.
Well, that ain't the way I heard it, Johnny. The way I heard it, one feller says to the other feller...
Play, Billy.
Fibber, Nick DePopoulos and I have written a little poem. Do you mind if we recite it now?
Yes, Harpo, I do.
All right, here goes. You start it out, Nick.
Sure. After listening to you, Fizzer, we admit that you're a whizzer. You must be the champion quizzer of our day.
But there's one interrogation, not in your examination, that we'd like to give quotation right away.
What can you, the listener, do that will prove to us that you like McGee and all his crew of zany acts?
It's a very simple answer.
Okay, Harpo must think he's doing an Edgar Guest appearance. Fanfare! So, you think you're smart, eh? All right, folks, now we're going into the fourth and last round of our So You Think You're Smart, eh? Quiz contest. And the first contestant to come before the microphone, who is it, Harpo?
Mr. Silvius Watson.
You ready, Watson?
Yeah.
Very well, Mr. Watson. The question is, if a hairdresser is somebody who curls up and dies, and a sculptor is somebody who makes faces and busts, what is a Gibraltar?
That's the easy place. That's a man who gives up and brawls.
I'm sorry, Watson. Now then, who's next? Oh, yes, Mrs. Fling.
All right, Professor.
All right, Mrs. Fling. I'm going to have Mr. Billy Mills play part of two different numbers. You tell us what time of day is represented by each number. Number one. What time, Mrs. Fling?
I don't know, I'm sure.
You don't recognize 3 o'clock in the morning?
No, I always go to bed early back home.
I'm sorry to have kept you up, Mrs. Fling. Now, we'll try this one. Number two, Billy. There, what time does that represent, Mrs. Fling?
Well, I'm real sorry, but I guess I don't know.
Well, I'll give you a hint. When the da-da choo-choo leaves for Alabama, what's da-da?
That's baby talk. And I think the whole thing is simply ridiculous. Goodbye.
Make a note of that, judges. One of the entrants just made an exit. All right, Mr. Depopulos.
Ugly duckly, Fisher. If I'm not labeling under a Miss Apple Dumpling, I think I will be the first prize of the winner.
Well, don't be too sure, Nick. This is a tricky question now. Listen close. You are the pitcher in a ball game.
Sure. Am I being a north side pitcher or a south pew?
It's got nothing to do with it. Now let me finish the question. You're the pitcher in a ball game, see? Your side has one run, and you've struck out every batter. 1, 2, 3. Now, it's the end of the first half of the ninth inning. How many times would you throw the ball during the whole game?
I will have to concentrate on that a minute, Fisher. I am being a shark pill in the second inning of the first half, 1.3. Then there is being one run in lead sharks. So how many strike breakers do I speak for? Quite sure, Fisher. I'm having the answers the first box out of the shot.
Well, what is it?
I am pitching 54 times, I'm thinking.
Wrong. If you pitch 54 times, it would only be 6 innings.
Aha! That is being positively correct, Fisher. Because at the ends of 6 innings, somebody is knocking me on consipus with a roots beer bottle.
Dear, dear. Now the next and last contestant. Mr. Rollo McGee. You ready, Rollo?
Why, sure, cousin.
Listen, Rollo, lay off of that cousin business, will you?
Well, now, don't get into no ruckus about it, cousin. Well, if I don't get that there $25, how am I ever going to pay you all back that $13 I owe you?
Quiet. All right, Mr. McGee, here's your question. What comedian is on the air for Jell-O?
Is that all he gets for it? Don't he get no money?
Jack Benny, you're absolutely correct. Folks, that concludes this Do You Think You're Smart A contest. And as I see the judges have all gone home, I take pleasure in awarding the $25 to Mr. Rollo McGee. Here you are, Mr. McGee.
Hey, what kind of a chip is this? Come on.
Hey, now. Wait a minute, folks. Just take it easy. Sit down, please. Be calm. Hey, Harpo. Harpo, I had one question left over. Can you answer it?
What's the question?
How do you get out of here? Folks, in addition to Mr. Wilcox, Mr. Dennis, Mr. Mills, and all the contestants tonight, we also extend our thanks to those who so kindly supplied the material for the questions. Mr. Encyclopedia Britannica, Mr. Noah Webster, and Mr. Miller. Good night, Cy. Good night, Noah. Good night, Joe. Good night, folks. Good night, Molly.
And once again, you are listening to Radio Vault. This is the Tuesday, April 22nd edition. We just heard Fibber, McGee, and Company. I was going to say Molly, but like I said before, she was sick during that run. From May 31st, 1938, they were sponsored by Johnson Wax. And we will continue with our program. We've got Jack Benny on tap next. We'll get to him in just scant moments.
Coming to the Black Box Theater at Henry Ford College, Gruesome Playground Injuries, Rajiv Joseph's tale of friendship, wounds, and healing. Follow these childhood friends over the course of 30 years as they compare the scars and calamities that keep drawing them together. Due to strong language and frank conversations about difficult topics, audience discretion is advised. Come join Kayleen and Doug for a story of injuries, the scars they leave, and the stories we gain. The play runs April 18th through the 26th here at Henry Ford College on Evergreen Road in Dearborn. Tickets are now on sale through the college website, hfcc.edu. For more information, call 313-845-6478. That's 313-845-6478.
Sometimes things can get rather silly, but one thing's for sure, Phil Mack will guide you through and try to leave you feeling giddy. And try to leave you feeling happy.
Thematic. Thematic.
Heard on Wednesdays from 12 to 4.
Thematic.
Thematic.
Interviews, some classics, and
so much more. Thematic.
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 Woo!
Catch Thematic every Wednesday from 12 to 4 p.m.
Nerd.
The Jack Benny Program, transcribed from its earlier release for presentation at this more convenient hour. Gentlemen, tonight we're broadcasting from the world-famous Hollywood Canteen. Yes, the Hollywood Canteen, where hundreds of thousands of servicemen come to see stars like Dorothy L'Amour, Betty Grable, and Lana Turner.
That's right.
So, without further ado, we bring you a man dressed in a sarong, showing his legs, and wearing a sweater, Jack Benny!
Thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, I hate those corny introductions. You don't have to make up a lot of silly things just to be funny.
But Jack, I didn't make anything up. For one thing, you are wearing a sweater.
So what? I'm cold. I've got just as much right to be cold as Lana Turner. Besides, when I take the trouble to knit something, I'm not going to throw it away. Anyway, I'm not trying to look like a glamour girl.
Oh, hello, Phil.
Hello, Don. Hiya, fellas. Gee, it's great to be here in the canteen.
Hey. Hiya, Phil.
Hello, Dorothy. Yes, sir, fellas. It's wonderful to be right here in the canteen tonight.
Phil, stop calling me Dorothy.
Oh, it's you, Jackson. I'm sorry. That sarong had me fooled.
Phil, this is not a sarong. I've been making sandwiches in the kitchen, and I'm wearing an apron.
An apron? Then how come you got it pinned up over one hip with a rose?
Where? Oh, well, I didn't put it there. When I came here, that rose was in my lapel.
Then what's it doing down on your hip?
It's a rambling rose, and shut up. Anyway, we're here to entertain the boys, so let's get started.
Yeah, and say, Jackson, you want to know what's happening tonight?
What?
Well, Alice is letting our baby daughter listen to the program for the first time. And, gee, I'd like to say a few words to her.
Well, go ahead, Phil.
Okay. Hello, my little bitchy tootsie bowl. This is your great big dowdy talking. And your great big dowdy is going to come home soon, and then a little lampy wampy can pull your little arms around him and give him a great, great big kiss.
Oh, that was cute, Phil.
Thanks, Jackson. Now I'd like to say something to the baby.
I thought you were talking to the baby.
Listen, Jackson, if I ever talked that way to my kid, she'd hide my cornbread.
Well, I wouldn't blame her. By the way, Phil, fine ad-lib line, hide that cornbread. Phil, how old is your kid now?
Oh, she's, let me see now. Well, she was born in February 1942, and this is February 1944, so, well, now let's see. There's 1942, mm-hmm. and 1944. Uh-huh. You got a pencil, Jackson?
Yes, Phil, but this one won't do you any good. There's no eraser on it. Anyway, here.
But, Phil, the answer's very obvious. If your baby was born in February 1942, and it's now February 1944, she must be 2 years old.
How do you know it ain't your kid? Wait a minute, Don, I'll make it easier for him. Look, Phil, how many candles did you put on your baby's birthday cake?
63.
Did you put 63 candles on your kid's cake?
Why not? I can afford it.
Oh, yes, Alice is working. But, Phil, I don't care what you can afford. At least my ad-lib gets something, you know. Phil, I don't care whether you can afford it or not. Your kid was born in February 1942. This is 1944. She must be 2 years old.
All right, so she was born in 42. 42, 43, 44. She's 3 years old.
Phil, she's 2 years old.
I say she's three. I ought to know how old my own kid is.
Answer the phone, Don. Give me that pencil, Phil. I'll show you.
Hello? Yes. Yes, he's here. It's for you, Phil.
Okay. Hello. What?
Oh. Are you sure? Okay, honey, goodbye. You're right, Jackson. The kid is 2 years old.
Who is that, Alice?
No, the kid.
Well, I'm glad she straightened you out. We come to the Hollywood Canteen to do a program, waste half of it by...
Hello, Jack. Well, how's the show going?
Oh, hello, Mary. Mary, I was trying to find you. Where were you? You're all out of breath. Your hair is mussed up. Look at your shoes. What happened?
I was jitterbugging with a soldier in the middle of Vine Street.
In the middle of Vine Street? Mary, if you're going to jitterbug with a soldier, you should do it right here at the canteen.
Where do you think we started?
Oh, you mean someone opened the door while you were dancing?
What door? We just went da-da-da-da-da, and we were out in the street.
Most of these boys here are in such a hurry. They like to dance with a girl and see the town at the same time.
Well, it wasn't so bad when there were just the two of us dancing down the street, but before I knew it, we picked up 12 more soldiers, 17 sailors, 9 Marines, and 2 civilians.
2 civilians?
Yeah, with that mob hanging on me, they thought I was the Sunset Bus.
Mary, you certainly are having a lot of fun today, aren't you?
Yeah. You know, Jack, I like to dance with servicemen, but the way they grip you, oh, brother.
Grip you?
Jack, they hold on to a girl tighter than you hang on to a dime.
Mary, I don't hang on to dimes.
You don't, huh? Every time you open your coin purse, a little sign comes out and says,
That's the name of the manufacturer, Smith. And son. Anyway, Mary, forget about me and think about the boys here at the canteen. You promised to help serve sandwiches.
Oh, you're right, Jack. I better go out in the kitchen and see how my maid Butterfly's doing. She's helping out, too, you know.
Okay, Mary. I'll see you later.
My heart tells me this is just a fling. Though you say our love means everything. Oh, Butterfly. Butterfly.
Yes, Miss Livingston.
Butterfly, how are you getting along with the food?
Oh, fine. But the radishes keep disagreeing with me.
I don't mean that. Tell me, how do you like working here at the Hollywood Canteen?
Oh, it's wonderful. You know, Miss Livingston, last week when I was working in the kitchen, Hedy Lamarr was there, too.
Hedy Lamarr? Well, that was nice.
Yes. And you want to know something? I think you're much prettier than she is.
Now, Butterfly, if you were working for Miss Lamar, would you still say that I'm prettier than she is?
Oh, Miss Livingston, you see right through me, don't you?
Well, flattery is nice, but you shouldn't overdo it. By the way, wasn't your soldier boyfriend supposed to come here to the canteen today?
Yes, ma'am. But Jerome Coleman told me he couldn't get away from camp because they liked him there and gave him a special award.
A special award?
Yes. KP.
But, Butterfly, that's no special award. KP means kitchen police.
Oh, I thought it meant captain's pal.
Well, it doesn't. How could they possibly give an award for... Oh, there's the introduction for Dennis Day's song. Let's open the door so we can hear it.
Deep in Shadowland I drifted through the night that used to be. Ah, but now the veil is lifted.
Dennis Day for the first time on the air. And Dennis, you sang that beautifully.
I don't think so.
You don't?
No, I sing and I sing, and the only one that swoons is me.
Well, kid, you certainly are frank.
I wish I was.
I don't mean him. Now, look, kid. After our show tonight, I want you to go home and pack because we're going up north to do some camp shows.
Up north?
Yep.
Oh, boy, are we going as far as San Diego?
Dennis, San Diego is south of here.
That was before the rain.
Oh, yes, that's right. I agree with everything. Well, anyway, Dennis, be sure to pack tonight. Because we're going to leave tomorrow, and our next broadcast will come from the Army Air Base at Lemoore.
Okay. Oh, say, Mr. Benny, do you mind if I take my mother with me?
Your mother? I don't even want her to come down to the station.
Every time I get near that woman, we wind up in an argument.
Well, you don't know how to handle my mother. Why don't you do what my father did?
What did he do?
He killed himself.
Dennis, I met your father on Wilshire Boulevard this morning.
Doesn't he look awful?
Now stop with that silly talk and tell your mother to stay home.
Say, Jackson, when we go up to San Francisco, what am I going to do about the band? You know, they're working here in Hollywood.
Phil, just tell them to play a little louder and we're all set. You know, don't worry, we'll hear them.
Oh, Jackson, you're always complaining about my boys being too loud. They don't play loud at all.
They don't, eh?
No.
Phil, last summer you were playing here in Los Angeles while I was in Cairo, Egypt. And when one of your boys stood up and played his flute, three snakes stuck their heads out of a basket and spit at me. Play loud. And now, fellas...
Oh, say, Jack.
Yes, Don.
I meant to ask you, speaking of Cairo, are grape nuts and grape nuts flakes as popular in Egypt as they are here?
What did you say, Don?
I said, are grape nuts and grape nuts flakes as popular in Egypt as they are here?
Popular? Let me tell you a story, Don. Come closer. This may be interesting. Very interesting. I was crossing the Sahara Desert on a camel, and the sun, the merciless, unrelenting African sun, was beating down, scorching the desert sand. When out of this burning vastness, a figure came staggering toward me, weak from exhaustion and starvation. As I jumped down off my camel, this man, this stranger, this wanderer, crawled up to me, and sobbing hysterically, he cried,
"Food! Give me food! I'm starving, I tell you, starving! Save me! Oh, save me! I'm dying!"
I gazed at this pathetic figure. With pity in my heart. And then I reached into my knapsack and took out two boxes, one grape nuts, the other grape nuts flakes. His eyes lit up with anticipation. And again he screamed,
"Food! Food! At last! I'm saved! Saved!"
So I said... "Here, my good man, which will you have, grape nuts or grape nuts flakes?" For the next 3 days, he couldn't decide. So in trying to help him reach a decision, I said, "Listen, my friend, grape nuts are a malty rich, sweet as a nut cereal, with whole grain nourishment."
"Yes, yes, yes, I know."
"While grape nuts flakes are a malty rich, sweet as a nut cereal, with whole grain nourishment." So he looked up at me and said,
"I like them both, I tell you, both. I don't know which to eat. Oh, save me. Help me decide."
So I said, "Take them both, my good man. They're not rationed." So he took them, Don, and he ate them both, grape nuts and grape nuts flakes, not even noticing there wasn't any sugar and cream. And when he got through, he was so happy and so grateful to me for saving his life. He threw himself on the ground in front of me and said,
"My, what big feet."
Jack, what? Jack, is that story you told me the truth? Did that actually happen?
Yes, Don, it happened exactly 4 times.
With the same man?
No, he was busy one night. We had to get another actor. Anyway, the story is the truth.
That's right, Don. I was there with Jack when it happened.
Oh, hello, Larry.
Well, look who's here. Larry Adler. Larry, what are you doing at the Hollywood Canteen?
Oh, I drop around here quite frequently.
So do I. I generally bring my violin and play for the boys.
Well, one thing, Jack, you know your constitutional rights.
Larry, after a crack like that, you ought to do something to redeem yourself. How about playing a number on your harmonica for the boys? Begin the Begin. What do you say, son? Thank you. Begin, played by Larry Adler, the world's greatest harmonica player.
Oh, now, Jack.
You know, Larry, I wish I could play an instrument that you could blow like a harmonica or a clarinet or something.
You shouldn't have tried it with your violin, Jack.
Now, what do you mean?
Well, I saw a picture of you and Larry in North Africa, and you had your violin in your mouth.
Yeah?
Mary, that picture was taken just as the boys were shoving it down his throat.
Oh, yes, I recall that.
Say, Jack.
Yes, yes, Don, with sugar and cream. Yes, yes. And now, fellas. Oh, say, Mary. He don't care as long as he's got sugar and cream on it. That's all. Fellas, Mary, how's the food coming along?
Well, Butterfly's finished making the sandwiches.
Gosh, I wonder if the lemonade is ready. Oh, Rochester. Rochester. He never hears me. Phil, give me a pair of dice, will you? Thanks.
Who's doing it, for how much, and what's the point?
Rochester! He went right down on his face, folks. Rochester, where were you when I rattled those dice?
In Pomona.
Way out in Pomona?
Yes, boss, I'd have been here sooner, but I came in on my knees.
Well, get up off your knees. People will think you're Al Jolson.
Al Jolson? After it rains, I'm still Rochester. Who's he?
Well, get up. You're supposed to be in the kitchen mixing some punch.
Well, boss, as long as I'm here, I'd like to help entertain the boys. I rehearsed a song.
Well, that's a nice gesture, Rochester, but you can't sing.
Who can't sing? You just don't appreciate my soft, tender voice.
Soft, tender voice?
Yeah, in my part of town, they call me the sentimental fellow with the mellow bellow.
Oh, sure, sure.
Really, boss, I used to sing with the Hall Johnson Choir.
What happened?
Johnson threw me out in the hall.
And how do you expect to sing here?
I've been practicing. I got a trained voice. Listen.
Wait, do you call that a trained voice?
Yes.
Sounds like it was trained with a whip and a chair. Anyway, Rox, I'm not going to argue with you any longer. No. You can't sing here.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. This is the Hollywood Canteen. If he wants to sing, let him sing.
Oh, hello, Eddie.
Hello, Mr. Jack.
Go ahead, Rox. Rochester and sing.
Now, wait a minute, Cantor. If he sings, I won't have time to play my violin.
Play your violin?
Yes, I don't mind doing comedy and jokes and everything, but to me, music brings out the real Benny.
Anybody who hasn't got an answer to that is stupid.
Mary, keep out of it. No kidding, Eddie. Don't you think that I have the poise of a great violinist?
Well, Jack, remember 2 weeks ago when I came to your birthday party and you played Love and Bloom?
Yes.
Let me tell you something, Jack. When you lifted your violin and placed it under your chin, that was true artistry.
Uh-huh.
And when you finished and took it from under your chin, well, Heifetz couldn't have done better.
Thanks, Eddie.
But, brother, that stuff in between must be a new secret weapon.
Music. You're just jealous because I've been in show business longer than you have.
How could you have been in show business longer than I have? I'm older than you.
You're older than me? Are you kidding? I'm older than you.
What are you talking about? I'm much older than you. I'm 39.
39? Well, I'm... Oh, are you as old as that, Eddie? Gee, I didn't know that, kid.
Well, I did exaggerate a little. Huh? I'm 37.
Well, even at that, I'll have to admit I'm a year younger.
Well,
answer the phone, Phil.
Okay. Hello? Yes? Okay, I'll tell him.
Who was that, Phil?
My baby. She wants you two kids to come over and play with her.
Well, what do you know?
Shall we bring our rattles?
Yeah, let's.
With your bones, you won't need any.
Oh, yes. Come on, Eddie. Let's go.
Right,
we sure had a lot of fun here at the canteen, and Larry Adler, thanks a lot for joining us.
You're welcome, Jack. It was swell.
And Eddie, it was nice of you to drop over, too.
Say, Jack, do you mind if I say a word?
No, not at all. Go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to listen to my program next Wednesday night when I have a most important announcement to make.
And we may never know when that announcement was made. You are listening to Radio Vault on WHFR 89.3 and WHFR.FM.
Coming to the Black Box Theater at Henry Ford College, Gruesome Playground Injuries, Rajiv Joseph's Tale of Friendship, Wounds, and Healing. Follow these childhood friends over the course of 30 years as they compare the scars and calamities that keep drawing them together. Due to strong language and frank conversations about difficult topics, audience discretion is advised. Come join Kayleen and Doug for a story of injuries, the scars they leave, and the stories we gain. The play runs April 18th through the 26th here at Henry Ford College on Evergreen Road in Dearborn. Tickets are now on sale through the college website, hfcc.edu. For more information, call 313-845-6478. That's 313-845-6478.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Henry Ford College Learning Lab is your central location for academic support. They strive to assist students and faculty with techniques that are evidence-based and will increase your academic success. The Learning Lab offers in-person and online services to help you succeed. They offer tutorial assistance provided by faculty, professional, and student tutors, one-on-one academic assistance, including strategies for improving test-taking and studying, workshops and presentations to classes or groups on strategies for learning success, study groups and review sessions on a variety of subjects, hands-on learning resources such as anatomical models in our bone room, computers, printing, copying, and scanning. For more information, please visit hfcc.edu/learnlab.
No, no, Mary, I've made up my mind. I am not going into that studio and broadcast tonight.
Oh, Jack, let's not stand out here in the hall arguing. Everybody's looking at us.
Let them look. If you think I can do a show tonight after making a monkey out of myself on that Quiz Kids program, you're crazy.
That was Wednesday. People have forgotten all about it.
Oh, they have, eh?
And besides, you're a comedian. You're not supposed to have any brains.
Oh, you're just trying to make me feel good. There I was with those little kids, and I couldn't answer one question. And me, 34 years old. I couldn't even answer a simple question like, where's the Taj Mahal?
You could have built the Taj Mahal since you were 34.
Go ahead, rub it in. What a blunder. After all the years I spent in showbiz, I had to stick my neck out and ruin everything. Oh, well, that's life for you.
Pardon me, Mr. Benny. May I have your autograph?
You don't want my autograph, girlie. I'm washed up. Thanks, just the same.
Oh, Jack, you have to dramatize everything.
I do, eh?
Supposing you did miss on a few questions. You're not supposed to be Einstein.
I'm not supposed to be Phil Harris, either. My goodness. My cousin Boo Boo would have been as good as I was on that program. And all he knows is... I tell you, Mary, I'm not going on the air tonight.
Oh, for heaven's sake. If you're so ashamed of yourself, why don't you go out and join the Foreign Legion?
You might think that's a gag, Mary, but the Foreign Legion isn't such a bad idea. I can't get over it. Imagine not getting that one question about the Taj Mahal. I knew the answer, but I opened my mouth and nothing came out. Not only that, a fly came in. Oh, well, nothing I can do about it now.
Jack, hurry up. The program starts in 30 seconds.
Well, I won't be on it.
Now, Jack Benny, stop acting like a big baby. He'll be right in, Don.
Mary, I'm not going... Stop pulling me. Mary, let go of my arm.
Come on, Jack. Remember, you're a trooper.
A what? Oh, yes, that's right. Once a trooper, always a trooper. The show must go on.
Quiet, Jack. We're on the air.
Okay. Gee, I hope I'm good tonight.
Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens a program with the Vine Street Viggle. Played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we bring you one of the most brilliant minds in America today. A man whose meek and humble appearance conceals the brain of a genius. A man who appeared on the Quiz Kids program Wednesday night and didn't know the Taj Mahal from the Empire State Building, Jack Benny. Yeah.
Thank you. Hello again. This is Jack Benny talking. And Don, I can't blame you for ribbing me tonight. Those Quiz Kids really gave me the old one, too. I was never so humiliated in my life.
Well, I wouldn't take it so hard. After all, Jack, it's nothing to be ashamed of.
Oh, it isn't, eh? Well, let me tell you something, Don. Everybody's snubbing me. I met Barney Dean on the street the other day, and he wouldn't even speak to me.
Barney Dean? Who's he?
Just throw a cigar away in front of the Regent Hotel. You'll find out. Can't understand it. We've always been such good friends.
Well, that's the way it goes.
But I'm not complaining, Don. I had it coming to me after that showing I made Wednesday night. I can take it, though.
You can take it?
Yes.
Then why did you try to hang yourself Thursday morning?
Oh, for heaven's sake, I was hanging up a little laundry. I fell off the ladder and got tangled in the clothesline. That's all.
Then explain that note you left. Farewell, cruel world.
Oh, that must have fallen out of my scrapbook. That's a note I wrote one time when Clara Bow wouldn't go out with me. She got mad because my garter got caught in her wristwatch during a Charleston contest. We were disqualified. Anyway, Don, when Mary saw me, I was just hanging up a few socks.
On Thursday? I thought you always did your washing on Monday.
I couldn't do it Monday. I gave a reception for Lady Mendel. What do you want me to do, ask her to run the ringer? She came over to my house to meet the quiz kids.
Then why didn't you do your laundry Tuesday?
You know darn well that Tuesday is my day to go out and catch dogs in Beverly Hills. I was elected to the office, and it's my duty. Now, hello, Dennis.
Hello, Mr. Benny. Say, I heard you on the quiz kids program last week.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, you sure were smart.
Smart? I didn't even open my mouth.
That's what I mean. Don't talk, brother, unless you got a lawyer with you.
You're a little mixed up, Dennis, but thanks anyway.
You know, Mr. Benny, when I was 8 years old, I was just as bright as any one of those quiz kids.
You were?
Yeah. What happened to me?
I'm sure. I don't know.
Some say one thing and some say another.
Well, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, Dennis. You've got a good voice. What more do you want? You know, Don, as a rule, I'm pretty hard-boiled, but even though those quiz kids made me look like a nickel, I can't help liking them. They're so sweet and unspoiled.
By the way, Jack, are they still living at your house?
Yes, Don, but they're leaving tonight.
They better check out before 6 o'clock or they'll be hooked for another day.
Listen, Mary, at a lot of hotels, the guests have to come to be out by noon. So don't run down the Beverly Hills tourist haven. Rotary Club every Wednesday.
I thought the campfire girls met on Wednesday.
Only in the winter. But honestly, fellas, those kids really made a hit with me. Gosh, they were wonderful company. I may be a bit sentimental, but I don't know. I'm going to miss the patter of little feet running around the house. It'll be so quiet.
Why don't you put shoes on the mice?
Oh, stop. No use being sentimental around here. Say, Dennis.
Yes, please?
As long as Phil isn't here yet, how about your song? What's it going to be?
I'm going to sing a brand new number called Once Upon a Summertime. And this is the first time it's ever been done on the air.
Well, a newie, huh? Let's hear it, Dennis.
Okay.
Hold it a minute. Come in.
Telegram for Jack Benny.
Take it, Mary. Wait a minute, buddy. Here's a dime for you.
Oh, goody. Now I get my curls out of hock.
It's all that zombie needs is curls.
Say, Jack, this wire's from Waukegan.
Oh, from home, eh?
Yeah, it says, you certainly disgrace the family on the Quiz Kids program. Personally, I'm disgusted with you.
Disgusted with me? Who's that from?
Cousin Boo Boo.
Well, how did Boo Boo ever find out about telegrams? He must have seen the picture Western Union. Sing, Dennis.
The story I'm about to tell isn't very new. A lot of people know it well. Now I know it too. It's a load off my heart, nothing more. So don't stop me if you've heard this one before. Once upon a summertime, not so long ago, there were two in a love affair. One of them didn't care. What happened, I'll never know. For once upon a winter, affair turned cold. And because of a change of heart, this story had to be told. It lasted through September, October and November, and I still remember. If I love some other time, I'll know what to do. I'll find someone who'll love me through summer and winter time too. Through summer and
Once Upon a Summertime, written by Jack Brooks and Norman Barons, and sung by Dennis Day. And Dennis, that was not only a great number, but your voice was really heavenly. It was positively ethereal. All right, Don, ethereal.
Oh, Jack, it's so ridiculous.
Don, Dennis's voice was positively ethereal. Now go ahead.
Darn you, Jack Benny, I'm going home.
What? Well, I'll be darned, he left. I must have wounded his big fat vanity. He's so temperamental lately.
Well, I don't blame him. Did you write that commercial, Jack?
Yes.
Well, I thoroughly stunk.
Mary, those are all clever ideas and should be tried out. You know, I got a marvelous one for next week. Look, as soon as Dennis finishes his song, we'll... Oh, hello, Phil.
Hiya, Jackson. What's the matter with Don? I just seen him walking down the hall.
Oh, he's mad at me.
The guy's screwy. I said hello to him, and he says, I'm sick of you, too.
He did, eh?
Yeah, you know, the guy was lipsing.
That's lisping. Not lipsing.
Well, he did it with his lips.
I don't care what he did it with, the word is lisping.
All right, have it your way. Hiya, Mary.
Hello, Phil. Say, Phil, how are you and the boys going over to the Paramount Theater?
Mary, we're a riot. You ought to hear the laughs I get with my gags.
I can imagine.
Get this one, Jackson. When I first walk out on the stage, I say to my guitar player, I say, hey, Frankie, who was that lady I seen you with last night?
Uh-huh.
And before he can answer, I hit him right in the kisser with a blueberry pie.
Why, Phil Harris, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Throwing a pie in a guy's face is the oldest comedy bit in show business.
With blueberry? You're thinking of custard.
Oh, I see. You modernized it, huh?
You know, I can't imagine people laughing at that kind of stuff nowadays.
Neither can I.
Oh, you can't, eh? Why, after the first show, the manager came backstage and told me I was terrific. He said, Harris, you ought to have your own radio program.
He did, eh?
Yeah, but don't worry, Jackson. I'm loyal. I'm with you for years.
Well, thanks. Now, if I was loyal, you'd be all set. Let me tell you something, Phil. I used to be in vaudeville, but I never stooped so low as to throw a pie at anybody. That's real hokum.
What about that corny piece of business you used to do in your violin act?
Corny piece of business?
What was it, Mary?
Jack used to play by the waters of the Minnetonka, and for a finish, Barney Dean would squirt him in the face with a bottle of seltzer.
Yeah, now the guy won't even speak to me. But, Mary, that was a very clever tie-in. You see, the song I was playing was about water, so Barney Dean squirted seltzer water on me. That was the idea.
Remember the time he played Among My Souvenirs and he took your watch?
Well, that was just for a gag. I got it back later. Anyway, I'll never forget one day when Bart... Come in.
Hello, boss.
Oh, hello, Rochester.
I got the quiz kids out in the car. They're all ready to go to the station.
Already? I didn't know it was that late. Say, Phil, the kids are going back to Chicago tonight, and I promised to take them down to the train. So you carry on with the show, will you?
Okay. Hey, Frankie, go out and get a blueberry pie.
You don't have to do that here. Just play some numbers. Come on, Mary. You ride down with us. So long, Phil. See you later, Dennis.
So long, Mr. Benny.
The kids are in the car, eh, Rochester?
Yes, sir. And, boss, listening to those kids talk is really an education.
It certainly is.
You know, I told them the salary you were paying me, and they took my weekly earnings, multiplied by 52, and gave me the square root of my annual income.
The square root, eh? What was it?
Believe me, boss, it ain't worth rooting.
That's too bad. Now, listen, Rochester.
Oh, there you are, Mr. Benny.
Yes?
I've got your papers ready to sign. You leave in 10 days.
What? Oh, I meant to get in touch with you about that. I'm not going.
Well, it's pretty late for that, Mr. Benny.
I'm sorry. You have to forget the whole thing. Come on, Mary. Darn it, I meant to write him a letter.
Who is that, Jack?
The recruiting officer for the Foreign Legion. You know how depressed I was. It's all off now, though.
I'm sure disappointed, boss. I got a gal in Morocco.
Well, you weren't going. Well, there are the kids. Come on, Mary.
Okay, Bo Jeff.
Hello, kids. Here's Uncle Jackie to take you to the train. Now, I'll sit up in front with Rochester. And, Mary, you get back there with the kids. Move over, Gerard. I don't like that horn. It sounds too cheap and tinny. That didn't come with the car. Where did we get that horn, Rochester?
That ain't no horn. It's an old atomizer.
An atomizer?
Yeah, don't you smell that Tesoro Lamour every time I squeeze it?
Well, that's one on me. An atomizer for a horn.
That's nothing. Our spare tire is a life preserver from the Albany night boat.
Oh, yes, I fell overboard one night. It's lucky I had that on. Everything comfortable in the back seat, kids?
Yes, Mr. Benny, it's fine.
Yeah, fine.
Good, good. You know, Uncle Jackie is going to miss you, little rascals. But you certainly had me on the ropes last Wednesday night.
We sure did.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Do you still feel like hanging yourself, Mr. Benny?
No, I'm all right now. But you kids certainly made a monkey out of me. Gosh, I didn't know anything.
Cousin Boo Boo is sick about it.
Never mind. Well, Claude, are you going to miss California?
I certainly am, Mr. Benny. I believe that Horace Greeley put it very succinctly when he said, "Go west, young man."
Oh, he did. He put it very... Yes, sir. Horace Greeley was a great inventor.
Why, Mr. Benny, Horace Greeley wasn't an inventor. He was a newspaper editor.
Oh, he was, eh? Well, if you're so smart, what paper?
The New York Tribune from 1841 to 1872.
I'd give $1,000 if I could learn to keep my mouth shut. Anyway, I wouldn't be surprised if Horace Greeley did invent something.
Ask Dad Amici, he'll know.
All right, Gerard. 1841. I'll check on that.
Hey, boss, there's Mr. Wilson walking down the street.
Oh, yeah. Pull up alongside him.
Okay.
Oh, Don. Don, would you like to ride down to the station with us?
I'm not speaking to you.
Okay. Keep going, Rochester. Poor guy, his tongue is still twisted. Well, Richard, you're rather quiet back there. Did you enjoy your visit with Uncle Jackie?
Yes, Mr. Benny, but I'm sure sorry I didn't get to see Carmichael. Oh, yes, I was quite anxious to see your polar bear, too.
Me, too.
Well, kid, you certainly missed a treat. Carmichael is just about the cutest thing you ever saw. Soft, white, silky fur, loves to play, and he's just as gentle as a lamb.
Then what happened to the gas man?
You just drive the car. And Rochester, watch out. Watch out for that bump up ahead.
The what?
That bump. Oh, hang on, everybody. Rochester, will you please watch where you're driving?
You're at the wheel now.
Oh, my goodness, get over here. Mary, are the kids all right?
You better call the roll.
Okay. Claude?
Here.
Richard?
Here.
Gerard?
I'm Gerard Darrow. I'm 8 years old and I go to the Radwell School.
Don't give your billing. Just answer. Well, thank heaven the kids are all right. Be careful now, Rochester.
Yes, sir.
Still don't like that horn. I want to get something unusual. Something that sounds different.
Why don't you get your cousin Boo Boo to go...
Just keep my relatives out of this, will you? Well, kid, it won't be long now before you'll be on that choo-choo.
Choo-choo? What's that? Oh, that's baby talk for locomotives.
Baby talk, eh? I said choo-choo till I was 29 years old.
You didn't stop drooling till you were 30.
Oh, quiet. Hey, Rochester, we're near the station, are we?
Pretty soon, boss.
Oh, Gerard, I think we ought to straighten things out with Mr. Benny now, don't you?
Let Richard do it.
Do what? What is it, Richard?
Well, Mr. Benny, we've been living at your house, and we haven't paid our bill yet.
Your bill? Oh, forget it, kids. I don't want your money.
But, Mr. Benny, we ought to pay you. We lived at your house 2 weeks.
2 weeks and a day. But forget it. Forget it, kids. It's all right with me. I enjoyed having you. Really.
But, Mr. Benny, if we went to a hotel, it would have cost us money. So why shouldn't you get it?
Yeah. Why should... Oh, forget it. Forget it. You kids were my guests. Let it go at that.
But, Mr. Benny...
Watch out, Claude. This can't last forever.
Mary, you know very well I wouldn't accept any rent from these lovable children. But... when they get to Chicago and they be like sending me a little gift, that's entirely up to them. Well, kids, here we are at the station. Pull up by the entrance, Rochester. Now, we haven't got much time. Pile out, kids.
Jeez,
come on.
It's going to be funny.
Watch your step, kids. Watch it there. Take it easy.
Say, boss, should I put my red cap on and take the bags in?
Not so loud. There are a lot of them standing around. Come on, kids. Come on, Mary. This way, kids. You just got time to make the train.
Oh, look. There's Mr. Kelly, our quizmaster. Yes, and there are the other kids.
And there's Aunt Bessie.
Wait, Miss Gerard. Don't run ahead. Everybody stick together. Come on. Come on.
Here we are on the choo-choo, as Mr. Benny puts it.
Gee, he's a nice man. And he didn't even charge us for those 2 weeks. He certainly fooled me.
Ready to go, boss?
Yeah. Gee, I hated to see those kids leave. You know, Mary, they got to be just like my own children. No kidding, I was crazy about them.
Oh, stop blubbering. You'll see them again.
Yes, but I was so used to playing with them and everything. What'll I do now? What'll I do when I come home evenings? What'll I do in my spare time?
Let's look for the gas main!
All quiet! Come on, let's go! Well, we're a little late. Good night, folks.
Remember, next Sunday, April 27th, this program will come to you on Daylight Savings Time. Consult your local newspaper or movie and radio guide for current time in your community.
It's the National Broadcasting Company.
Hey, this is the Gothabilly Man, your friendly neighborhood beatnik, inviting you to join me for the Wrecking Hours, Segabilly Surf Rock, and Rockabilly radio program. Tune in every Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. on 89.3 FM in Detroit, WHFR.FM online. It's the station making waves, WHFR Dearborn.
Mom and Dad used to argue about everything, especially about Dad's drinking. It drove me crazy. It got so bad, I couldn't do my homework. I couldn't concentrate. I absolutely refused to let any of my friends come to our house for any reason. I would have been humiliated if anyone found out how much my dad drank and how loud my mom screamed at him. My family went from totally crazy to quiet, calm, and even peaceful. The only thing that happened is my mom started going to Al-Anon family groups. Her relationship with my dad really changed. I asked Mom if she would take me to her Al-Anon meetings or to Alateen. I wanted to see if I could have a better relationship with my dad. I'm sure glad I did. If someone's drinking troubling you, you might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon or Alateen family group from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON or go to alanon.org.
All right, you are listening to Radio Vault on 89.3 WHFR. We just heard from February 27, 1944, the Jack Benny Show. Actually, we heard April 20, 1941. The episode with the Quiz Kids. Next hour, we will be taking a listen to Ozzy and Harriet. The father and mom of the late Rick Nelson. And David Nelson. They're on the show with as kids. That'll be during our final hour of today's Radio Vault. And we do this every Tuesday between 10 in the morning and 1 o'clock. If you like the mysteries and the more intense dramas and scary shows, that happens on Sunday night from 9 until midnight. Right here on the station making the waves, WHFR 89.3. Coming to you from Henry Ford College, it is time now to go back to October of 1940. And this is the actual Eddie Cantor show. Let's listen, shall we? Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, the makers of iPana for the smile of beauty and Sal Hepatica for the smile of health present It's Time to Smile
with Eddie Cantor. Time to smile, where's that grin? Put a dimple in your chin. Better times are coming, things are humming, time to smile. What the world is after now is a lot of laughter now. There's no room for gloom is out of style. And it's time to smile.
And here he is, Eddie Cantor.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Harry, look in my eyes. Look at my. I want to ask you something. Look in my eyes. What? Tell me the truth. Did they call your number?
Oh.
Did they?
They missed me by 9.
Yeah, years, huh? No. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to say this thing. Here is one numbers game of which we people in America can really be proud. You know that, don't you? In all the rain and everything, what a day I had.
What'd you do?
I went to the automobile show, and are the cars beautiful this year? Such improvements, Harry Bunzel.
Yeah. Well, I read about them, Eddie. Say, did you see that new feature on convertibles, the hydraulic top? You just press a button and the top comes off.
Oh, there's a much simpler way. All you have to do is to drive to any highway and wait for a woman driver to come at you. Right away, the top comes off, the bumpers come off, the wheel, the whole business. But some of the gadgets on the cars are really wonderful, like those electric signals.
Signals? What kind of signal?
Well, when you turn the steering wheel, a light flashes on the back of the car that says, I'm turning right or I'm turning left.
Oh, yes.
And for women drivers, it just says, guess what I'm going to do now.
But you know, the thing I like about those new cars, Eddie, is the brakes. You know, they put the emergency on the left side under the dashboard.
Well, everything on the new cars is concealed. You press a button, the lights disappear. You close a door, the running board disappears. And when the guy from the finance company comes around, the whole car disappears.
Oh, yes, those finance companies really mean business.
Oh, they do things right. You know those musical horns, they go, da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Well, when you buy a car on time, the finance company installs one of those horns for you, and on the first of each month, the horn goes, don't forget the payment. Oh, but Harry, you should see the upholstery on the new Packard.
What?
The seats are pure lamb's wool. The seat covers are lamb's wool. The entire lining of the car is lamb's wool. Every time you sit down, the whole business goes, ah.
But you know, I've made up my mind to buy a new car, Eddie. The thing that sold me was the way they put the gear shift on the steering wheel.
Oh, that's nothing new, Harry. 6 years ago, my uncle had a car that had everything on the steering wheel. The gear shift, the clutch, the brakes, the motor.
Well, wait, how could that be?
He hit a telegraph pole. The whole thing is...
You know, Eddie, I think I'll buy one of those new 1941 models.
Yeah.
Say, what do you suppose they'll allow me on my car?
Your car? You call that jalopy a car? Why, even Jack Benny's Maxwell does this to it. Goes away. Go. I understand that when you turn on the motor, the fan stands still and the car spins around. Is that right, Harry?
Yes, you're right, Eddie. I ought to stop driving that thing. It isn't fair to the pedestrians.
Oh, don't worry about them. There's a new thing out called pedestrian pants. They do away with hit-and-run drivers. You see, the lining of these pants is carbon paper. And when a car hits you, all you've got to do is to take off your pants and you've got his license number in black and white. There it is. Say, Bobby Sherwood and Dinah Shaw, you're late. You're late,
well,
you know.
Well, we've been for a ride in Bobby's new car, and it sure was cozy.
Boy, did you like that lonely road I picked out?
Yeah.
And were you glad when I stopped and suggested we sit in the back seat?
Yeah.
Well, you still owe me 15 cents for that last game of rummy.
Wait. What goes on here? Bobby, you take a girl out on a lonely road and play rummy? Why, even a kid like Mickey Rooney gets fun out of his new car. He's got an automatic clutch.
Well, what's new about that?
This one isn't on the car. Bobby, I'm afraid you're not the least bit romantic.
Oh, don't say that, Mr. Cantor. Maybe you just didn't have the proper atmosphere. Bobby, can't you picture us on a tropical shore down Argentina way, playing on the beach?
Yeah, sure sounds swell, Dinah, but you know, I can't go in the water.
Well, why not?
Well, my bathing suit's got a hole in the knee.
Bobby, I've think our romance might get somewhere. We were down in the tropics, just you and I, alone. I hear music. I hear a soft guitar. Underneath a pampas moon, when you sing a happy tune, and you kiss your kids goodbye, you'll find your life will begin the very moment you're in Argentina. If you're romantic, senor, then you will surely adore Argentina. You'll be as gay as can be if you will learn to see, see like a Latin. For Mr. Sure, as you learn, then you will never return to Manhattan. When you hear Yo Te Amo, you'll steal a kiss, and then, and then, and then, and then, mañana, it's just to let you know that you're gonna meet again. I'll bet an old castanet that you will never forget Argentina, where there are rumbas and tangos to tickle your spine, moonlight and music and orchids and wine. You'll want to stay down Argentina way.
Argentina.
That was fine, Dinah. And now, if you'd only...
Mr. Cantor, would you mind stepping out of the way, please? Thank you. All right, Miss Shore, look over here. Now, a little to the right.
Look, mister, would it be asking too much?
Mr. Cantor, will you please step over to one side? And don't let me have to speak to you again. I have pictures to take.
Yeah, but I have a show to do. I've got a lot of jokes to tell.
Yeah, I've heard them. Sure. Are you ready now? Where's that smile?
Will this do?
Yeah, that's perfect. There we are. There's nothing like an attractive smile to make a pretty girl look prettier. That's what I always say.
You do not. Harry Von Zell always says that, don't you, Harry?
Well, yes, Eddie, I do, but I say it differently.
And better. Much better. Much better. Go on, Harry.
All right, Eddie.
You know, Harry, I think it's awfully cute of Bobby Sherwood taking Dinah out in his new car.
Oh, I should take my girl out in a wheelbarrow,
Mr.
huh?
Mr. Guffey,
how do you like it?
I'm glad to see you, Guffey. Where have you been?
Fine thing. He lays me off for a year and a half, and he wants to know where I've been. I have to be out of work because you're lazy.
Look, I'm not lazy, Guffey. I'm working on the radio now, and I'm going to Hollywood to make another picture.
You're
going to
make another picture?
Yeah.
Won't give up, huh?
You don't understand, Guffey. I'm glad you're here. Why didn't you come to see me sooner?
Sure. A lot you'd care if I got shot climbing over the wall.
Guffey! Tell me, you've been in jail?
You don't think they cut my hair this close at Princeton?
Why, Guffey, who said anything about your hair? I never mentioned it.
Oh, there's nothing up here to talk about, huh? Go on, tell them. Tell the world. Tell everybody I'm bald. Start a rumor.
Don't be silly, Guffey. I wouldn't tell that to a soul.
Oh, you're ashamed of my head, huh? What's wrong with a man being bald?
Nothing, Guffey. You've got one of the finest looking heads I've ever seen.
Oh, sure. You'd like to see it hanging on the wall in your trophy room.
No, I would not.
Oh, hanging's too good for me,
oh, no.
Huh?
Will you take it easy, Guffey? I'm your friend. Why, I'm probably the only one in the world who likes you.
You gotta be the exception.
What does he want? If you don't stop aggravating me, I'm going to go home.
Oh, home. I can't go with you. You're ashamed to let me see your house.
Who's ashamed? Who? I've got a beautiful house. Everything brand new. Why, it's so clean, you can eat right off the floor.
Too cheap to buy plates, huh?
Get away from me. I'm cheap. I'm cheap. Why, I've got silver plates, gold plates, platinum plates.
Capitalist. Poo. Go on. Go on, tell the world. Show off your wealth to everybody. I'll bet you wouldn't give me a nickel to buy a cup of coffee.
That isn't true. Here, Guffey. Here's a nickel for a cup of coffee.
Oh, nothing to dunk with it, huh?
Why not? Here is a dollar. Buy anything you like to dunk with. Dunk to your heart's content. Dunk as much as you want.
Sure, I should go in up to my elbow, huh? Ruin my wristwatch.
What does he want?
You'd like to call me Sloppy Guffy.
No, Guffy, you are not sloppy. You're not a jailbird. You're not bald. You're just like I am. Exactly like I am.
How do you like that? Now I'm a jerk.
I don't know what's happening to you. I can remember the time when you were able to cope with Guffy.
Yeah.
Father Time must be catching up with you.
What is this Father Time stuff? Will you stop with that Father Time? Why, I'm as young as Rooney.
Mickey or Pat?
Yeah. Wait a minute. Some funny stuff. Encourage him. An announcer's getting left. Look here, Mr. Bonzel. I'm tired of being insulted around here. Everybody picking on me with that old man stuff. I'll show you. I'll show all of you. I'm quitting this program.
Oh, well, no, Eddie, don't be silly. We're just ribbing you. Everybody around here likes you very much.
They do?
Certainly.
I'm glad they do, Harry. I'm glad they do.
They've always liked you. When are you quitting?
Yep. That's the last straw. Listen, everybody, Dinah, Bobby Bonzel, Guffy sponsor, NBC, I'm quitting this program. And I'm leaving right now. And when I walk through this door, I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back when I walk through this door. You hear me, everybody? I'm quitting this program! Well, maybe I have been a bit hasty. It's a lucky thing you spoke up when you did, Bonzel.
Spoke up? I didn't say anything.
Don't beg me. I'll stay. I'll even forgive you for calling me an old man. I won't even move away from this microphone.
Too weak to walk over to the door, huh?
Get away. Get out of here, Guffy. I'm staying, Harry. But not because of you. It's because of my fans, my public. I can't let them down. You see what I mean?
Mr. Canner.
Yes?
I never enjoyed your program as much as I did last Wednesday.
What are you talking about? I wasn't on the air last Wednesday.
I never enjoyed your program as much as I did last Wednesday.
Say, Eddie, how did it happen that the president took your place on the air last week?
Oh, it was very simple. He asked my permission. He called me on the phone and sang to me.
Well, what did he sing?
He sang, "Your time is my time, my time."
It was nice of him to ask your permission. Anyway.
Yes, and since he took over my job on the radio last week, I think it's only fair that I take over his job of running the country this week. What do you think? Huh?
Wait a minute. I don't... What do you know about running a country?
Oh, Harry, with my cabinet, I couldn't miss. Right away, I appoint Jack Benny, my Secretary of the Treasury.
Jack Benny, Secretary of the Treasury?
Anybody gets a nickel out of him, it's a miracle, I'm telling you. And if that isn't enough, I'll appoint Mr. Guffy Minister without portfolio.
How do you like that? A big country like this, too cheap to buy me a briefcase.
Get away from me. Me. Let's not waste any time. Harry.
Yes.
Bobby Sherwood.
Yeah.
Dinah.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Guffy.
Huh?
Are you all ready to come with me to the White House?
Yeah.
Then come on, let's go. Gotta pack my grip, gonna take a little trip, go to Pennsylvania Station, gotta make a reservation, take the 10 o'clock sleeper, gonna ride all night. So long, everybody. Don't forget to write.
Red cap, sir. Is you looking for a porter?
Yeah, take the bag, boy. Here's a tip, a quarter.
Track 29, sir. What's your destination?
Washington, D.C., the capital of the nation.
Washington.
I'm on my way to Washington. I'll take the whole gang along. We'll run the country with song. And when we get to Washington, my administration will pass legislation inviting the nation to our celebration. From the coast of Maine to the Rio Grande, we'll sing to the swing of the big brass band. Heisel Cats and the Hoi Polloi, Texas, Oregon, Illinois. From Alabama to Boulder Dam, we'll shout the praises of Uncle Sam.
We're on our way to Washington.
We'll bring a new kind of thrill to good old Capitol Hill.
We're on our way to Washington.
When I become the president, we're really gonna play some. We'll all roll legs on the White House lawn, and I might even lay some.
It won't be the first time.
We're on our way to Washington.
Eddie, so this is the White House.
Didn't we get here quickly?
Yes.
Harry, isn't it beautiful? Over here is the Orchid Dining Hall. Look at the inscription on the wall in letters of gold.
Oh.
Liberty and justice for all. The greatest figures in American history have dined here.
What does that other sign say there?
Watch your hat and coat.
Well, Eddie, aren't there any famous paintings around here?
Oh, yes, in the library. Didn't you see them?
No.
And, Harry, some people have no respect for art. You know that painting of the Three Musketeers?
Yeah.
Well, somebody painted a mustache on the fellow in the middle.
Well, Eddie, the musketeer in the middle is supposed to have a mustache.
For heaven's sake, don't tell anybody I rubbed it out.
Well, now, look here. Before you get into any more mischief, we better find out where your offices are.
I'll ask somebody. Say, mister! Mister, where are the offices of the chief executive?
Why, who are you?
The president of the United States. Who are you?
I'm Dorothy L'Amour. Kiss me.
Get away from me.
Eddie, is that Dorothy L'Amour?
No, I couldn't tell with the thing. Look.
Hey, look. Look, here's your office. President Cantor, will you step in?
Yes, come in.
Oh, say, isn't this something? Well, Chief, what's going to be your first official act?
Harry, I'm going to wipe out the greatest menace now confronting the people of these United States. Double features. It's so silly. One theater I saw had a big sign outside that says, "Tonight, 40 little mothers. Dr. Kildare goes home." I actually saw it, Harry. It was up an electric sign. Gee, what do I do now? The phone bell is ringing. I've got 12 different phones on the desk, and I don't know which one to pick up. Let's see. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Hello? Who's calling?
This is Mo.
Is Parks Commissioner Mo McGonigal.
President Cantor, it is my unpleasant duty to report that 20 benches were broken in Central Park last Saturday night.
20 broken benches, eh? I guess the fleet's in. Dinah?
Yes, sir.
Take a letter to the Secretary of the Navy.
Right away, sir.
Dear sir, last Saturday night in Central Park, 20 benches were broken during necking maneuvers. We'd either have to get stronger benches in the park or weaker sailors in the Navy. Now I'd better go over to the FBI and report what I have to... Come in.
Excuse me, Mr. President. I'm Mrs. Grumps, your next-door neighbor.
Yeah.
May I borrow a cup of sugar?
Well, I don't know. I'll have to take it up with the Senate.
But why all this fuss over a measly cup of sugar? I saw a senator come in here yesterday and get an appropriation for $1 million.
Is that sugar?
Brother, it ain't hay!
Hey, Eddie, was that Dorothy L'Amour?
No.
Mr. President?
Yes?
The Senate is in session now, and they may be discussing some important issues.
Thank you, Dinah. I better turn on this loudspeaker and listen in.
Mr. Chairman. Chair recognizes the senator from the state of Methylfezzlepuck. I wish to introduce a bill which, if passed, will shake the very foundations of the American home. Resolved that the legal resident and occupant of the White House hereafter be allowed to lend, lease, entrust, or give to his neighbor, Mrs. Grumps, one measly cup of sugar.
The boys are really working.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I protest most strongly against the passage of this bill. Why should the White House give this woman a cup of sugar? Is it necessary? Is it constitutional?
Is it granulated?
What if it is granulated?
Say, she may not like it.
If she doesn't like it, she can lump it. One moment, Mr. Chairman. Let us examine the sugar question thoroughly. Now, sugar is sweet, and so are blueberry pies. Now, where do blueberry pies come from? Blueberry Hill. And where does Blueberry Hill come from? From Bobby Sherwood, playing the number of the same name. Play Bobby.
Thank you.
hire Bobby Sherwood's orchestra for the next inaugural ball?
Excuse me, President Cantor. I've come to see you about the draft.
The draft, my dear young man. The draft is all over.
Sure, all over the house. Doors opening, windows opening.
Oh, now I see what you mean. Do open doors and windows make you nervous?
No, but drafts give me a cold in the head. And when I get a cold, it hangs on for days.
Why is that?
Why is that? So I can teach you tricks and make a pet out of it. Why does anyone get a cold in the head?
I wouldn't know, but maybe if you were to get after a cold at its very beginning, it wouldn't hang on so long, huh?
Sure, sure, but get after it with...
Yes?
Gee, Mr. Cantor, is it true that you're the president now?
That's right, Bobby.
And you have the power to do anything you want?
Anything.
Boy, what a chance to repeal Prohibition.
Bobby, they did repeal Prohibition.
They did? You mean there's no more Prohibition?
That's right. No more Prohibition.
Yippee!
Oh, stop, Bobby. Look, Harry, I can see there's too much here for one man to handle. I'm going to swear you and Bobby Sherwood in as my assistants. Raise your right hands. Do you solemnly swear to be forever faithful to the office which I've entrusted you with?
I do. I do.
I now pronounce you man and wife. $2. What am I saying? What am I...
Hello, Mr. President?
Yeah, that's right.
We're having a little trouble down here with the $10 bills.
Yeah.
Is Hamilton's hair parted on the right side? Is there an eagle on the back of the bill? And, do all the serial numbers start with B?
That's exactly correct.
Oh, thanks.
Wait a minute. Who is this?
Oh, just a counterfeiter.
Counterfeiter. Do you know they can put you in Alcatraz for that?
What do you think I'm calling from, the store club?
Hey, Eddie, was that Dorothy L'Amour?
No. Quick, Harry, turn on that loudspeaker. It's time for me to check up on the Senate again.
Okay, here we go.
Gentlemen, why should the White House give Mrs. Grumps a cup of sugar? Why should the White House give Mrs. Grumps a cup of sugar? Why?
Can anyone answer that?
$8 in the Senate Encyclopedia to the Senate of the Ball.
Before we make this momentous decision, a decision that will affect the lives of...
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt the debate in the Senate to bring you an announcement of national importance. Results of the Fifth Empire.
Wait a minute, you can't turn it off, Eddie. You've got to get the Senate report on Mrs. Grump's sugar.
Oh, yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, a decision has just been reached by the Senate in regards to Mrs. Grump's sugar. We have decided to let Mrs. Grump's have her lumps.
Harry, we must let Mrs. Grump's know. Quick.
Yeah, I'll get the window.
Yoo-hoo, Mrs. Grump!
Okay, shoot the grease to me, Chief.
Mrs. Grump, the Senate has decided you can have that cup of sugar.
Coffee's cold.
How do you like that? Congress gives me the sugar, and now Mrs. Grumps trumps the lumps. That makes us two mugwumps, chumps.
Yeah, it gives me the jumps.
Yeah, but I'd rather be two mugwumps, chumps with the jumps than down in the dumps doing bumps with the mumps.
I think you've got something there, Eddie, but who's going to pay for the sugar?
A resourceful president like me knows all the answers. Dinah, take a letter.
Yes, sir. Ready for dictation.
To the people of the USA, I send this proclamation.
Shoot.
Let's put a tax on the beautiful girls. Place an assessment on love. We can tax the benches where lovers embrace. We'll make each couple foot the bill for their parking space. Let's charge a fee for the thrill of a kiss. Charge for the moonlight above. And when we start collecting from the beautiful vamps, I want to be the guy who goes around with the stamps.
Oh, let's put a tax on the beautiful girls, and we'll balance up the budget with love.
If I thought Bobby Sherwood would consider romance, I'd gladly pay my taxes up a year in advance.
Dinah.
Oh, let's put a tax on the beautiful girls, and we'll balance up the budget with love.
Do sugar girls get a discount if they promptly remit?
Yes, any striptease dancer can take off quite a bit.
Oh. Let's put a tax on the beautiful girls, and we'll balance up the budget.
And nobody will begrudge it, cause we'll balance up the budget with love.
you. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, I'd love to remain in Washington. I'd love to be the president. I'd love to hang up my hat in the White House. But I can't do that because, you see, most of all, I love to spend one day with you as friend to friend. I'm sorry it's true. Good night.
Join us again next Wednesday, won't you? And in the meantime, remember the two products which make these Wednesday evenings together possible. Stay tuned to this station for another thrilling installment of Mr. District Attorney, which follows immediately. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
If you're 19 or older with certain underlying medical conditions such as asthma or diabetes, you can get vaccinated against pneumococcal pneumonia, a potentially serious bacterial lung disease that can disrupt your life for weeks. If you're 65 or older, it is also recommended you get vaccinated against pneumococcal pneumonia, no matter the season. Talk to your doctor about vaccination today and learn more at lung.org/protect yourself. A message from the American Lung Association in collaboration with Pfizer.
Jumper, the one who wrote that Trailways bus out of Louisiana. One hot summer July was 103. No air conditioning on the bus. How did I keep cool? I had a fan from the Mount Zion Baptist Church. Every time I go home, the pastor said, you didn't have to take my church fan all the way to Detroit. My show is called Cruising and Bluesing in the Nighttime, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. every Wednesday. We do the blues, and we got blues you can use.
It is 12 o'clock on listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. We are WHFR Dearborn. And we are in the home stretch of today's Radio Vault. I've got an episode of Ozzie and Harriet. Now, this show was on television for many, many seasons. And Ozzie Nelson owned the rights to the television show. And all those shows have been released on DVD officially by the estate of the Nelson family. The radio shows are just kind of out there. We have them for you. Now, this particular show is from 1944. It was from the Armed Forces Radio Service. And if you've been paying attention to this program for any period of time, you know that AFRS, Armed Forces Radio Service programs, are no different from the domestic equivalent. The only difference is there's no commercials. And you might hear a public service announcement for members of the armed forces. But without further ado, oh, by the way, we have the CBS radio workshop for the second half of this hour. But right now, a little bit scratchy, but nonetheless, you'll enjoy hearing about Too Many Luxuries. Ozzie and Harriet Nelson, the Nelson family, with David and Ricky as kids. Let's listen.
The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, presenting America's favorite young couple, Ozzie Nelson and Harriet Houston. And now let's see what's going on in the Nelson family.
Oh, good morning, everybody.
Morning, Mom.
Ah, something sure smells good.
I guess breakfast's just about ready. David, you got your T-shirt on backwards.
Yes, ma'am.
Ricky, pull your shirt collar out from under your sweater.
Yes, ma'am.
What's the matter with you fellas? Don't you have time to dress?
Ozzie, your shirt's out and back.
And when at last they all sit down at the table with bright, shiny faces, with the exception of Harriet's, which is bright but not shiny, David opens the conversation.
Did you sleep well last night, Pa?
Yes. Fine, thank you, David.
How are you feeling this morning?
Oh, fine, thank you, son.
Then I'd like to have 65 cents to go to the movies, okay? Gee, thanks.
Just a minute, not so fast. Anyway, I happen to know that seats for children are 50 cents.
Not the loges.
The loges? Mean to tell me you have to sit in the loges?
We don't have to, but we like to.
The seats are softer, and our sitters don't get so tired of sitting.
Seems to me you kids are getting pretty soft. Imagine that, Harriet, loge seats. Pure luxury.
Of course, if we can't get low seats at the movies, you won't go.
Well, that's because I don't like to sit on the side and look at Lana Turner from an angle. It makes her have one eye lower than the other. I said something? Well, it's not fair to Lana or to me.
How about it, Pop?
No, I'm sorry, boys, but I won't pay for luxuries like that. When you get old enough to make your own living and you work for your own money, then you can have luxury. Until then, nothing doing. If you want low seats, you'll have to take the extra 15 cents out of your allowance.
But that's just it, Pop. We both need a bigger allowance. What do you say, Pop?
David, when I was your age...
Oh, Pop, not one of those stories. Now,
David, if you want to get a raise, you've got to listen to your father's stories.
Well, it's not compulsory, Harriet.
Ozzie, don't be so sensitive.
Well, tell me all about when you were a boy, Pop.
I'm out of the mood. But I do think it's time both of you boys learned to appreciate the value of money. Now, when I was your age...
He's back in the mood again.
Harriet, please. You boys know what my allowance was when I was your age?
Whose age, Pop? Mine and Ricky's.
When I was Ricky's age, I didn't even get an allowance. When I was your age, David, I got 15 cents a week. 15 cents. And I managed on it very nicely. Do you know how?
You stole?
No, Ricky, I was careful because I respected the value of money.
Well, dear, I just think the boys reflect the trend of our time. Come to think of it, there's an item or two I need, and I'll have to have a little extra money, too.
Harriet, haven't we been spending quite a bit lately?
I suppose we have, dear, but the way prices are going up...
Well, can't we cut down just a little?
Of course. I need shoes.
Well, naturally.
The new handbag and accessories.
I suppose the bag has to match the shoes.
Well, it's nicer if it does.
And more expensive. Honestly, I don't know what you women put in handbags you couldn't get into a paper sack.
Oh, Ozzie, quit kidding. It's not as though we're wasting money on luxuries.
That's just it. A lot of things we think of as necessities we should consider luxuries. We could start doing without a few things. How about you boys cutting down on sodas?
Sure, Pop. I will if you will.
David, I have cut down.
I suppose they could cut out buying comic books.
Yes. Well, not until after the next Buck Rogers episode.
What do you think, Ricky?
I don't know. What's a luxury?
A luxury? A luxury is, well... It...
Luxuries are things we don't need and can't do without.
Yeah, I suppose that's as good a definition as any. As a matter of fact, that's a good way to test yourself. Next time you want to buy something, say to yourself, do I need this? Do I really need this? You can apply the test to loges.
Do I need loges? Do I really need loges?
Well, David?
Yep.
What makes you think you do, David?
Those Saturday matinees, Pop. 3 features, 4 serials, the news, and Bugs Bunny.
What about the kids who don't sit in the loges?
Most of the time, they run up and down the aisle.
Well, maybe the exercise will do you good.
Where are you going?
Right over here. I happen to have a book of quotations here. It might be interesting to see what some of the great men have said about luxury. Luxury.
Never mind, dear. We know what you mean.
Here we are. Now, listen to what Voltaire says about luxury. People have declaimed against luxury for 2,000 years in verse and in prose. And people have always delighted in it. Oh, no. Yeah, listen to what Samuel Johnson says about luxuries. No nation was ever hurt by luxury, for it can reach but a very... Listen to what Oliver Wendell Holmes says about luxury. Give us the luxuries of life and we will dispense with its necessities. Well, never mind. Listen to what I say about luxury. I say they're no good.
You want me to destroy that quotation book, dear?
Well, that's right. Laugh at me. But I mean this. Our family's getting soft and it shouldn't. After all, who built this country up?
Well,
I'll answer, David. The pioneers built it, and they were simple, hardworking men who never wanted any luxuries. They're the men who made our country great.
Doesn't sound like much fun.
I think that from now on we should decide to do without those unnecessary luxuries. Pattern our lives after those early pioneers.
Did the pioneers eat breakfast, dear?
Naturally.
Thank goodness. Gloria! Oh, Gloria!
Did you call me, Mrs. Nelson?
Yes, I did, Gloria. We're more than ready for breakfast.
Do I smell pancakes, Gloria?
That's right.
I thought so. Boy, they smell good.
I'll have some pancakes too, Gloria.
Me too. I'll have a double order. I'm hungry.
Pancakes.
Would you like something a little more rugged and down-to-earth, dear?
As a matter of fact, I would.
What would you like, Mr. Nelson?
Gloria, I'll have some gruel.
Gruel?
Yes, gruel. Every good American knows what gruel is.
All you do, Gloria, is mix a batch of oatmeal until it's good and soggy, and then you beat it into a thick paste.
Is that gruel?
Yes.
I'll have some pancakes. With no syrup and very little butter.
Yes, sir.
Don't look so bewildered, Gloria. Mr. Nelson's on a rugged, thrifty pioneer kick this morning.
Well, a simple life would do you a lot of good, too, Gloria. I notice you go in for a lot of little extravagances. Take that rhinestone pin you're wearing on your apron. Wouldn't you be just as happy without it?
Yes, sir, but my skirt would fall down.
Well, the point I'm making is that we all spend money on things that we really don't need, and as a result, we don't save enough. Now, do you save any money, Gloria?
Well, I once had $75 saved up in quarters and halves. But you know something? I didn't get a good night's sleep once while I had that money. I used to just toss and turn.
You mean you'd lie awake worrying about it?
No, ma'am, but $75 in quarters and halves makes a mattress pretty lumpy. Now, I better get back to those pancakes or we won't have any.
See, if you learn to resist temptation now, David, it'll be a big asset to you in later years.
Yes, sir.
After all, it's just as important to develop your willpower as it is to develop your muscles.
Yes, sir. Oh, boy, look at that.
What's that, David?
In the window of the camera store. It's one of those new speed cameras.
Oh, that's a beauty, isn't it? Boy, would I like... David?
Yes, Pop?
Now, here is a perfect example of what we were talking about. Now, there's a very desirable thing, that camera, right?
Yes, sir.
I look at it, and I feel a temptation to buy it. But I realize it would be an extravagance. It would be wrong to buy it. Even with its telescopic lens and its built-in rangefinder.
Pop, you're drooling a little.
Nonsense. As I was saying, I conquer the temptation to buy that camera. And as a reward, I walk away from here with a feeling of deep satisfaction.
Wouldn't you rather walk away with the camera?
No, it's a sinful luxury. Why, it probably costs hundreds of dollars.
No, it doesn't. I can see the price tag. Let's see it.
I tell myself I can be happy without it, and I walk away from this window and forget about the camera.
Well, Pop, are you coming?
My goodness, is that all it costs?
Pop, I've got to get down to the 5 and 10, or I won't get home in time to go to the movies. I'll see you later. So long, Pop.
So long, camera. That's David. There must be something wrong with it. Should cost more than that. Oh, I'm sure. Must be something. Couldn't have a camera.
Hello, Mr. Nelson. You were looking at that camera, weren't you?
I was just wondering if there's anything wrong with it. I mean, I thought those kind were very expensive.
Confidentially, they'll be double the price next week. They just came in this morning, and we only have two left.
Oh.
Let me show it to you.
Oh, well, thank you. I don't want to buy it. Not today, anyway.
Who's trying to sell it?
Oh,
I just want to get your opinion on it.
Oh, but
I've
really
asked a few professionals about it, but I want the opinion of an amateur who can really take fine pictures.
Well, honestly,
now,
I don't think...
Mr. Nelson. I want you to tell me if you think a camera like this is too complicated for an amateur who demands the very finest.
Well,
it's been completely simplified so any idiot can take pictures with it. Intelligent persons, too. Notice this handy little gadget.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it's a pleasure to watch you handle it, Mr. Nelson. You've got the smooth touch of an expert.
Oh, no,
Mr. Nelson, please. Every time your negatives come in here, my men fight for the privilege of working with them.
Really,
Mr. Nelson, I would consider it a personal favor to me if you'd take this camera home, look it over thoroughly, take a few pictures with it, and give me your honest opinion of it.
Oh, I really don't feel...
Say, you want to be surprised? Here, tuck it under your arm. Isn't it light?
Yes,
take a few steps with it.
Yes.
No, the other way, towards the door. Doesn't it carry nicely?
Well, yes.
Your car is outside, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Wait a minute. I'll open the door for you.
Well, thank you, but really,
Goodbye, Mr. Nelson. Remember, you're under no obligation to buy. Miss Hogan, send Mr. Nelson a bill for that new Super Deluxe camera.
Come on, Mom. The kids told me they have bubble gum at the Martha.
In just a minute, Ricky. I'm going to look in this window. Oh, what's the matter? What a beautiful handbag. What a lovely, luxurious-looking bag.
Are you gonna buy it?
No, I guess not.
Gee, Mom, you're very brave.
I wish I weren't.
That bubblegum will be all gone if I don't hurry.
All right, you go ahead. I'll be there in a minute.
Okay, I'll be standing right by the candy counter. If you don't see me, listen for my bubblegum popping.
All right. Oh, that is simply stunning.
Yes, I'm the most beautiful handbag you've ever seen. Why don't you buy me?
Who said that?
I did. The gray suede bag with the silver top. Are you sure you don't need me? I look lovely with your new gray suit.
Oh, yes, I know you would. But no, I'd better not.
Please.
Well, how much are you?
The price is right on top of me. Aren't I reasonable? I mean, considering how beautiful I am.
Oh, I couldn't. Ozzy'd feel I'd let him down. It's an unnecessary luxury.
A lovely handbag is never a luxury. Come on. Why don't you come in and buy me? Do it for me. I want to be carried by someone attractive and well-dressed.
Gee, I don't know.
Come on, buy me. You and I will be wonderful together.
Okay, you talked me into it. Come on, boys, finish your lunch.
Did Pop tell you what he didn't do today at the camera store?
David, never mind that.
What didn't you do, Ozzy?
Gee, he was great, Mom. He looked in the window and he saw a beautiful new camera. He wanted it very much. He didn't buy it.
David, forget about it.
Ozzy, don't mark on the napkin with that pencil. Here, mark on the morning paper.
No, I'm sorry, I wasn't thinking.
A camera you wanted and you didn't buy it?
Well, I suppose I'm...
You should have seen him, Mom. His tongue was practically hanging out. But Pop's got willpower. He's loaded with it.
David, there's really no point in making such a thing about it.
That's nothing. You should have seen the way Mom didn't buy a handbag she saw today.
Now, Ricky, please finish your lunch. That's the new speed camera you've been waiting for 3 years, isn't it, dear? I don't see how you resisted it.
Well, Harriet, as a matter of fact...
Congratulations on your willpower, dear.
No, well...
I just wish I were as strong as you are about things like that.
You didn't buy that handbag, Harriet. Of course you didn't. You have such strength of character.
Oh, but I don't, really. Ozzy, dear...
Well, say, I just got an idea. I have to go outside and... let's see. Yes, I have to look at the car. Yes, that's a good one. I mean, I'll be right back.
Lunch,
here.
Excuse me. Keep on eating, everybody.
Okay. I wonder what came over him.
Mom, what was Pop scribbling on the paper?
I don't know. He seemed sort of nervous. I think he was just doodling.
Let's see. No, he wrote something. Hey, why do you suppose he wrote this?
What does it say?
Well, he drew a lot of triangles and circles. And then look what he wrote. Ozzie Nelson is a stinker.
And now back to Ozzie and Harriet. And things are just a little teensy-weensy bit tense around the Nelson household at 1847 Rogers Road. Ozzie, it seems, laid down the law this morning about wasting money on luxuries. Then he went downtown and promptly let himself be sold a beautiful new camera. Meanwhile, Harriet succumbed to the blandishments of a lovely handbag. Now, neither knows what the other has done. In fact, Harriet thinks Ozzie denied himself the camera. And Ozzie thinks Harriet denied herself the handbag. At the moment, each is feeling very, very guilty. As usual, Ozzie is battling it out with himself.
I can be strong. I can do it.
And what's more, he's winning.
I'll take this camera back no matter what sort of wisecracks he makes about it. That's what I'll do.
And so we find Ozzie sneaking out the back way. Toward the garage.
Hello, Mr. Nelson.
Hello, Emmylou.
Where are you going, Mr. Nelson?
Shh, not so loud.
What's the matter? Are you afraid Mrs. Nelson will hear me and find out where you are?
Please, Emmylou, come into the garage. At least she can't see me out here.
Jeepers, Mr. Nelson, what have you been up to? Certainly look guilty.
It shows, huh?
It sure does. Who is she, Mr. Nelson?
She? No, it isn't anything like that, Emmylou. I wish it were. I mean, it's much worse.
Really? What happened?
Well, as usual, I talk too much. And after giving the entire family a lecture about wasting money on luxuries, I was the one who weakened and yielded to temptation.
Oh, Mr. Nelson, I know just how you feel. You are looking at a girl who simply can't resist buying perfume. I spend my entire allowance on it.
Oh, is that what you've got there?
Uh-huh. I just bought it this morning. They had four different kinds to choose from.
Oh, what were they called?
Come hither, come nearer, come closer.
And the last one?
Where do we go from here?
Emmylou, I'm positive that you bought some of that. Where do we go from here?
Well, you're right, Mr. Nelson. Here, smell it. See if you like it.
They had some perfume.
Well, that was nothing, Mr. Nelson. Wait till I take the cork out.
Never mind, Emmylou. In fact, I have to hurry down and return this camera. I'll see you a little later.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes, Emmylou? Even if you leave the city. Goodbye, Emmylou.
Oh, no, Mr. Nelson. Please don't bring it back. You haven't given it a chance.
I know, but I really don't need it. And frankly, it involves a rather complicated family situation that I'd rather not discuss.
In other words, Mrs. Nelson won't let you keep it.
No, no, no. Believe me, that isn't it at all.
That's what they all say. Well, I guess it's always the woman who's the real boss of the house.
Oh, is that so?
Oh, I didn't mean to imply anything personal about you. But after all, you wanted to try the camera this morning, and now you come sneaking back with it.
Go ahead and take it back with you. Well, I suppose I could, but...
Of course you could.
Yeah, I'll just explain. She'll understand.
She better.
No, I mustn't weaken.
Mr. Nelson! Mr. Nelson!
I will not weaken! I'm sane! What a narrow escape.
I bought this bag this morning. I was wondering if you could give me my money back. I hate to ask you.
That's perfectly all right, madam. Is there anything wrong with it?
Well, no. As a matter of fact, I'm returning it simply because my conscience has been bothering me since I bought it. I just can't face my husband.
Very well, here's the slip. The cashier will refund your money.
So long, sucker. That gray suit won't be anything without me.
Oh, mind your own business.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, not you, miss. I just wanted to tell you how wonderful I think you were to resist buying that camera.
Oh, it was really nothing.
It took a lot of courage.
I might as well be frank about it. You're darn right it did. Of course, you gave up that handbag, and it was really beautiful, too, I'll bet.
The most beautiful bag I've ever seen. Ozzie, about that camera...
Don't worry about me, Harriet. I'm glad I took it back. It's glad I didn't get it.
I'll bet it takes beautiful pictures.
I know, but I don't really need it. As a matter of fact, I don't want it. I wouldn't have it if somebody gave it to me as a gift.
Oh, boy. Hi, Pop. Look here.
Look what Mom got for you.
Holy smokes, it's the camera. It's the same one.
Well, I thought you wanted it, so I bought it for you, but I guess I was wrong. Take it away,
boys. Wait a minute, boys. Let's think this over.
Oh, no, dear. You don't have to pretend you want it. I know how you really feel. Take it away, boys.
No. Don't go, boys. Harriet... I was just kidding myself a moment ago. I really do want the camera. Oh, I think it's just wonderful of you to get it for me, dear.
Well, dear, I have a little confession to make. I felt awfully guilty today because you saw this camera and didn't get it, but I did buy that handbag. I just returned it this afternoon.
Oh, I see.
You're the only one who was strong.
Well, Harriet, I often think it's easier for a man to have a strong willpower than a woman.
Davy.
Bye.
Go on, dear. You were saying that it's easier for a man to have a strong will than a woman?
Yes, because you see...
Audie, this is strange.
Hmm?
I just bought that camera for you less than an hour ago, and here's a bill for it, postmarked 11:30 this morning.
Harriet, I have a confession to make to you.
So you did buy the camera this morning?
Yes, but I took it back this afternoon... And then you know what I did? I went over to the accessory store, and honestly, I tried to buy the bag you were so crazy about. And you know what?
What, dear?
Somebody had bought it not 5 minutes before.
Well, don't worry, dear.
But I bought another bag for you. I hope you like it. Here.
Why, Ozzie, you sweetheart. Oh, it's lovely, dear. It's beautiful.
Oh, thanks. I'm sorry I couldn't get the bag you really wanted.
Ozzie?
Yes, dear?
I have a confession to make. I did return the other handbag, but, well, it was so beautiful, I bought it right back again.
Just been lying here thinking. Maybe the boys should have a slight increase in their allowance.
Oh?
What do you think?
I don't know. You think it's a good idea?
Oh, sure. A little won't hurt.
Okay. Comes out of your pocket, remember?
I know. Harriet.
Yes?
I've been thinking about you, too. As long as the boys are getting more allowance.
Yes, dear?
What about you? Do you think you could see your way clear to increase mine?
To the adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
once again sorry the recording, the original transcription is a little noisy. But that was from 1944, Ozzie and Harriet, the Nelsons. And we have got on tap next the CBS Radio Workshop.
Coming to the Black Box Theater at Henry Ford College, Gruesome Playground Injuries, Rajiv Joseph's tale of friendship, wounds, and healing. Follow these childhood friends over the course of 30 years as they compare the scars and calamities that keep drawing them together. Due to strong language and frank conversations about difficult topics, audience discretion is advised. Come join Kayleen and Doug for a story of injuries, the scars they leave, and the stories we gain. The play runs April 18th through the 26th here at Henry Ford College on Evergreen Road in Dearborn. Tickets are now on sale through the college website, hfcc.edu. For more information, call 313-845-6478. That's 313-845-6478.
Tune in Thursdays from 8 to 11 p.m. to hear The Jump Button. I'm your host, Rob with Two B's. On The Jump Button, you will hear music from and about video games, soundtracks, animation, and more. It's your weekly pop culture playlist and all the super dorky radio you can handle every Thursday from 8 to 11 p.m. Heard only here on WHFR.FM.
From Hollywood, the CBS Radio Workshop.
Desk clerk. Journal American 411? Right away.
Good afternoon, Arthur.
Oh, hello, Mr. Shelby.
Any messages for me?
Well, not since I came on, sir.
May I have my key, please?
I'm sorry, Mr. Shelby, but the manager says not to give you your key until your bill's paid.
Oh?
It's $113 and some odd cents.
I know.
You want I should call him so you can talk to him about it?
No. Never mind.
Sorry, Mr. Shelby.
It's not your fault, Arthur. I'll stop back in a couple of days to see if there's any mail.
Yes, sir. Yes, clerk. Well, I'm sorry, Mrs. Wilson.
$14.60, $65, $66. Well, I can eat for a week or so. And plenty of people sleep in the subway.
CBS Radio presents the CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Tonight, subways are for sleeping, based upon the Harper's Magazine article by Edmund G. Love, a true story of one man's strange adjustment to mid-century materialism in the largest city in the world. Have you ever gotten fed up with rent, taxes, and bills, and the clatter of telephones? With all the demands, large and small, that our complicated civilization makes upon us? Henry Shelby finally did. When they locked him out of his hotel room, he stayed out. For the past 3 years, he has, by choice, been homeless and without a steady job. Yet, Henry Shelby is no bum. He is as well-dressed and as smoothly shaven as the next man you'll meet. He's not stupid. He holds a master's degree in economics and is a former school teacher. He has never visited a soup kitchen or stood in a bread line or asked for a night's lodging at a Bowery Mission. Still, he has learned for himself how to maintain his sanity and peace of mind in a confused and confusing society, which takes from a man more than it gives. Henry Shelby has reversed the process, and this is how he does it.
I'm getting along all right. I'm perfectly happy. I'm just waiting to see how things come out. In the meantime, I see to it that I always have at least 15 cents, so I'm sure of a place to sleep. And the truest statement I ever heard is that no one will ever starve to death in the United States.
'86 in the bean soup.
All out of Yankee bean, Mac.
Cream of tomato's okay.
Tomato, a bowl. Well, as I live and hope to, Shelby.
Hello, Ernie. See, you've got the counterman wanted sign on the window.
Yeah, guy was here 2 weeks. Today never shows. Want to go to work right now?
Sure.
Well, go on back and grab a hat and jacket. I ain't even checked cash from breakfast yet.
Okay, fine.
Want a cup of coffee or something first? Go right ahead.
No, I'm fine.
Here's your soup, Mac. Crackers or bread?
Crackers. Hey, ain't you the regular counterman?
Me? I'm supposed to manage a joint.
You give any bum comes along a job?
Shelby ain't no bum, Mac. He's a college graduate.
Huh.
Michigan or someplace like that. Used to be a school teacher, too.
So?
Well, he shows up every 3-4 months, works a couple of days for $5 a day in his meals, and then he's gone. When he tells me he ain't coming back.
So that makes him he ain't a bum.
Well, it does in my book. He can do anything around the joint. Do it plenty good, too. How's the soup?
All right.
Anything else?
I don't know yet.
This jacket isn't exactly the best fit in the world.
You look great, Shelby.
I'll bet.
Now, here's your checks and a punch. Everything's the same as last time he was here.
Not quite. Corned beef and beans are up a nickel.
Hey, they are at that. I forgot. Well, she's all yours. I'll check the register.
Anything else for you, sir? Pie? Coffee?
Well, I might have some pie at that. Apple.
Right.
With cheese, I guess.
Right. Empty the mousetrap on this pie.
Hey, look, Shelby, I was thinking I got no night chef for the moment either. Why don't you stick around for a couple of weeks and help me out?
Well...
8-hour shift, 5 days, $55, and all the food you can steal.
Here you are, sir. Well, I'll think about it, Ernie. I actually didn't have to think about it. When I went in, I knew I'd only stay for a few days. I have 5 or 6 places like that. They're my social security. I use them when my cash is way down and my suit needs dry cleaning, and when I'm ready for a good, long sleep, lying down.
So, Henry Shelby works just long enough to get a little money ahead. Then he picks up his clean laundry and checks in at a respectable but inexpensive hotel.
Here's the $4.50 in advance. I'm afraid I don't have any luggage. And will you send the valet up to my room in a few minutes, please?
Once his suit is on its way to the cleaners, Shelby spends the next 24 hours in bed or under the shower. He has taken as many as 15 showers on one of these occasions and slept for as long as 22 hours.
It's an extravagance, of course. Costs me $7 or $8, and that's as much as I usually spend in a whole week. But I certainly do feel fine when I check out.
And thus refreshed, Henry Shelby sets out again to roam the streets of New York. First stop, to leave his laundry somewhere in the Grand Central area. He owns 2 of everything except for his 1 suit, and he'll pick up this bundle in a few days. Bathe and change in a booth at Grand Central Terminal and drop the soiled clothing off at another laundry in the vicinity.
I carry a safety razor in my pocket and I shave at least every 36 hours. It costs 25 cents for a booth, but I can freshen up generally at the same time. The bums who look like bums are mainly the ones the cops bother. Naturally, I don't consider myself a bum, so I make it a point not to look or feel like one.
...24 hours can be a long time, particularly when all you have to look forward to is 24 more of the same. But Henry Shelby fills them with endless variations of the same pattern, and he walks between whatever geographical points are involved. Breakfast time may find him at a juice bar on 3rd Avenue.
Large tomato juice, please. Come on there, friend. Fill it up. Your sign says 12 full ounces for a dime.
coffee at the automat on 6th, another cup later in the gloomy fluorescent glare of a cafeteria in the garment district.
I load in all the cream and sugar the mug will hold. They're calories, free calories.
Lunch in the Gramercy Park neighborhood today. Yesterday, it may have been at Broadway and 116th, but at the same kind of a white tile stand and very likely the same lunch.
A frankfurter, I guess, and a large glass of milk.
Two or three more cups of calories during the afternoon, and finally, the one substantial meal of the day.
The Vienna loaf dinner looks all right.
Vienna loaf, coming up.
Not that slice. The next one, with the hard-boiled egg in it. Yes, that one.
Fried or boiled potatoes, corn or stewed tomatoes.
No potatoes. Plenty of starch in the bread. How about a good helping of cream spinach instead?
Mac, if you got to order a la carte, why don't you go to the Waldorf or the 21,
huh? Well, I'll take you to either one of them someday, is my guess.
Yeah, I'll hold my breath. Okay, spinach. Now, corn or stewed tomatoes?
Stewed tomatoes. What's that you're putting on?
Gelatin salad comes with it.
No, thanks. Let's trade for a dab of those cooked carrots, okay?
Now, look,
they're
Frank,
probably cheaper than the salad. You're saving money for the management.
That's what I'm interested in. Okay, but don't ask me for no Charlotte Russe. There you are, Mac.
Very good. Very well-balanced dinner.
Yeah, not bad for 42 cents.
Not bad at all. I may continue to give you my patronage when I'm in the neighborhood.
The inner man is stoked, though perhaps not aesthetically satisfied, and always a walk between each refueling stop. The aesthetic hunger is assuaged along the way. There is the ever-changing kaleidoscope of Manhattan store windows, displaying their shiny wonders, their sturdy commonplaces, their exotic luxuries, their mundane necessities. There is a record of mankind's daily activities the world over, in a newspaper plucked from a trash basket, and there are benches and parks and public buildings where Henry Shelby may rest while he reads. There are pillared halls where paintings and sculpture may be viewed. Henry Shelby is a regular visitor to New York's many art galleries, but his favorite is the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Now, if you'll follow me, we will view the museum's unrivaled collection of the works of Edward Degas.
Edgar Degas. Edgar Hilaire Germain Degas.
Oh?
Oh, I'm sorry, madam.
Oh, don't apologize, young man. That's very interesting.
Degas worked chiefly in oil, although his renderings in pastel have achieved some fame.
He wasn't a bad sculptor, either.
Is that so?
The oil to the immediate right and above is At the Milliner's, and to the right of that and below is Dancers Practicing at the Bar.
Only the first one is a pastel, not an oil. This guide is new, I'd imagine.
Let's stay behind, Myrtle. This gentleman knows more about it than the guide does. You don't mind, do you, mister?
No, not at all. They sort of hurry you through on the guided tours.
Now, what about the one that's a pastel instead of an oil?
Well, Degas' pastels, particularly his later ones, do have a deep, rich, almost oil-like texture. He applied the color in successive layers, fixing each tone or shade separately, and using open lines to allow each undercoat to show through.
Oh, well, I don't quite understand, but I see what you mean. Are you an artist?
No, although I'm planning to do some painting. Sometime.
Well, my daughter's very artistic, back in Chillicothe. What's this one, that lady sitting with a big bouquet?
That's an oil. It's called Woman with Chrysanthemums.
What? That's a good name for it, isn't it?
Yes, isn't it?
Say, if you aren't an artist, how do you know all these things?
Oh, I spend a lot of time here, and I read a great deal.
Oh, you certainly must. Goodness, you're a regular Billy Pearson.
I beg your pardon?
You know, the jockey on television.
Oh, yes. I read about him. Didn't he win $64,000 and then go on and tie with a fellow named Price for another $64 or something?
Yeah, that's the one. Did you ever watch those programs?
No, I can't say that I do. I'm afraid I don't have a television set.
Yes, there's plenty of free culture and free entertainment to be found in New York City, even without a television set or a radio in your home. Even without a home. One of the most spectacular free entertainments in Manhattan is presented by the fire department. Henry Shelby always follows a fire engine. He generally gets to the fire, too. For the radius in which each engine company operates is small enough to permit even a pedestrian to arrive shortly after the equipment.
Oh, this one is nothing. It's just a chemical job. They might as well have left the ladder truck back at the station. Now, you should have been at Amsterdam on 133rd the other day. I happened to be in the neighborhood of the...
There are the inevitable New York traffic accidents. Shelby has a nose for these and for straight fights, and he never leaves the scene until the last policeman has closed his notebook. And the parks and public squares are places where a man with a message may speak it forth within certain limits of subject matter.
...can commit mass suicide, and that is to continue to eat the flesh of the animal. What Mother Nature intended us to nourish ourselves with grows in the ground.
Henry Shelby stops to listen to every street corner orator he runs across, weighing gravely the ideas he hears.
I can scarcely agree, but he does have a wonderfully resonant voice.
There are the new buildings that constantly alter New York's skyline. Our well-kempt vagrant knows every major construction project in town and shows up at the exact moment some critical problem is to be solved.
No. A little more to the right. Say, does it look to you as if they're placing that girder properly?
It doesn't right now, but they'll raise it another 3 feet and then force it to the right with a cross member.
Oh, yes, I see.
Actually, it's a different technique than we're accustomed to watching in the usual steel skeleton construction.
Seems to me there'd be too much strain on the cross member.
No, I understand the alloy is both light enough and strong enough so that, in effect, they're employing a variant of the ancient Egyptian post and lintel method.
Say, there are similarities, aren't there? You're engineer, I take it.
No. Matter of fact, my master's was in economics.
Is that so? I'm liberal arts myself, Yale 28. Construction sort of hobby of mine. Watching it at any rate.
Mine too. So much so that I've done quite a bit of reading on it. There. You see what they're doing now? That's how they equalize the stresses.
So they do. Your office in the neighborhood?
No, it isn't. I just happen to be passing this way.
Mine's just across the street, 230 Park. I'm H.J. Chisholm, Regal Paper Company.
How do you do, sir? I'm Henry Shelby.
Hello. You with the firm or are you in business for yourself?
Neither. I don't have a connection right now.
Is that a fact? Well, if you're looking, why don't you stop by the office whenever it suits you? We might very well have something for a chap like you.
That's mighty nice of you, Mr. Chisholm. I'm not really looking at present, but I'll certainly remember you when I am.
I wish you would. Say, wouldn't it save time and an extra piece of heavy equipment to haul those I-beams up on the construction elevator and then place them with one of those small hoists?
It seems that it would at that. I think you have something there, Mr. Chisholm. And I'm going to look into it the next time I'm at the library.
The public library. One of Henry Selby's favorite haunts. A fellow vagrant once advised him that the library was a good place to keep warm on a cold day. But he found it to be much more than that. On his first visit to the massive old building at 42nd and 5th Avenue, he asked for a copy of the New York Times for November 10th, 1936, and was referred politely to the microfilm room.
Here you are, sir. Are you familiar with the operation of the viewing machine?
Not particularly.
I'll be happy to show you. The entire edition is on this roll of film. You place it in the machine, attach the end, and thread it this way. Close the machine and turn the handle forward.
Yes, it's fine.
You sit right down here, use the headrest, and view the film through the aperture.
Yes, I see. Very clear and very comfortable.
Yes, isn't it? It rather makes research a pleasure, doesn't it?
I should say so. What if I fall asleep?
Well, I'm afraid no one would awaken you if you did. There seem to be so few of you scholars taking advantage of our microfilm facilities. Just come to the desk if you wish additional rolls.
Say, how long has this been going on?
Henry Shelby was asleep in 15 minutes and awoke undisturbed 5 hours later. For some time, the microfilm room was at the top of his list as a place of shelter. Then suddenly he realized it was a far more valuable place for pure entertainment. He has read all the issues of the Times available on film, all his favorite comic strips from the date of their inception, all the columns Damon Runyon ever wrote, and has even developed a system for playing the horses. One time, he worked long enough to accumulate $25, and with it, visited Aqueduct Racetrack.
Now entering the winner's circle is Time You Told Me, written by jockey Farrell Zufeldt. The time for the mile and a 1/16 was 1:43.2, and the result of the eighth race is now official.
11:20 to win. Let's see, that makes me $87.40 ahead for the day after expenses. Well, how long has this been going on?
Very prudently, Henry Shelby bought himself a new suit of clothes, leaving his original $25 untouched. A few days later, he visited Belmont Park and lost the entire sum.
I still play the races in the microfilm room. During the winter, I study the preceding summer's entries, make my selections, and check them against the results in the following day's paper. I never look at the results in advance. Might just as well be honest about it.
Yes, New York offers many diversions. There is the waterfront, the ferry boats, the slips where the huge liners dock.
I come down here a couple of times a week. I always try to be around when the Mary or the Elizabeth are coming in. Now, what's that Weehawken ferry doing a quarter mile off her course? Just sightseeing, I'll bet. I heard Captain ought to have his confounded papers picked up.
Shelby enjoys the ferry boats, all of them, but his favorite is the Staten Island ferry.
There's nothing quite like it in the world. Outward bound from the Battery, there's the thrill of passing the Statue of Liberty. And coming back, Miss Liberty welcomes you home as the incredible skyline of Lower Manhattan hangs shimmering in the haze, like the pleasure dome of Kubla Khan. Where else can a poor man get such an ocean voyage for a dime?
Of course, 10 cents for one round trip does put the Staten Island ferry in the luxury class. But during the rush hours, Shelby has discovered that he can board the Jersey Central ferries across the Hudson and make 3 or 4 trips for the same dime without being noticed. This kills time and also furnishes amusement, for Shelby quietly enjoys criticizing the pilots who do not bring their vessels squarely into the slips. Among other things, Henry Shelby has become an expert on the management and conduct of New York Harbor. And then there are the parades. New York City is the only place where there is a parade of some sort every day. That's one of the reasons Henry Shelby is happier here than he would be in any other city in the world.
I just love band music. Why, last Armistice Day, I saw 5 different parades and even marched in one. I carried the front end of the bass drum and got $3 for doing it.
So, the patternless pattern of Henry Shelby's days and the days of perhaps thousands like him, men who choose to work only enough to maintain a bare thread of personal existence in a society that clamors for workers and rewards them with possessions and security and the same comfortable resting place each nightfall. Where does Henry Shelby sleep? A clean hotel bed is a once-a-month extravagance to him. Perhaps he trudges to the Pennsylvania station and boards an 8th Avenue subway train at about 1 o'clock in the morning. That's why his cash minimum is 15 cents, the price of a subway token. He settles himself in the almost empty front car and drops off to sleep. He awakens before he reaches the end of the line, has a smoke, boards another train, and sleeps to the other end of the line. He has several standard trips mapped out, J Street to Queens, back to the Brooklyn end of the line, up to the tip of Manhattan, back to Penn Station. In 5 hours, he has probably netted 4 hours sleep. He has learned the habits of the transportation police, and he tries to keep himself from becoming too familiar a figure.
That's why I use the subway maybe only every other night, or not quite that often. In warm weather, there are fire escapes, some of them covered, and Central Park and Prospect Park. And when it's really hot, there are the beaches. No one ever bothers you there. Always plenty of legitimate sleepers trying to beat the heat.
When it rains and when the New York winter comes, there are other carefully cataloged places for shelter and a few hours' sleep. Grand Central, Penn Station, the Port Authority bus terminal, hotel lobbies. There are rules of conduct for each, and Henry Shelby knows and observes them all. On rare occasions, he's questioned, but he always has the answers.
Come on there, mister. Come on, wake up. Up.
Well, I certainly dozed off, didn't I, officer?
You certainly did. You think this is a flop house?
Of course not. It's very obviously Grand Central Terminal.
That it is, and we don't allow bums to lap their bibs in here.
Bums? I ought to resent that, officer.
Well, resent it all you like. Seems to me I've seen you in here before.
Well, that's quite possible. I take the 2 o'clock local for Poughkeepsie almost every night. I missed it tonight, so I'm waiting for the next train. 6:05, I believe it is.
It is. Can you prove you're not a vag?
A what?
A vagrant. You got any money on you?
Why, yes. Let me see. $6, $7, $8. And here's my ticket to Poughkeepsie.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'd better get going, mister, or you'll miss your train.
What?
Yes, it's 2 minutes after six.
Oh, I had no idea. I nearly overslept.
That you did.
Thank you so much for wakening me.
Not at all. That's what I'm here for.
Yes. Well, I must say you're right on the job.
You bet I am. That's gate 9, mister, the Poughkeepsie local.
Yes. Well, I don't want to miss it this time.
No, you don't.
So, for the first time, Henry Shelby had to take the train for Poughkeepsie under the suspicious glare of the railroad cop. But the ticket was never punched, for he got off the train at 125th Street to begin another day of Manhattan meandering. Henry Shelby is never without three tickets, one to Poughkeepsie, one to Princeton, and the third to Elizabeth, New Jersey, his operating equipment for sleeping in the three major terminals. Why does this strangely bewildered, yet far from hopeless man live apart from responsibility and the place he could so easily regain in working society? How many weeks, or months, or years will he continue to walk the streets of Manhattan?
I don't know how long I'll live this life. I don't have much trouble. I've never gotten drunk and lain in a doorway all day. I've never been on a police blotter. I've never had to beg. Things seem so easy and natural, just as though they were supposed to be this way. I'm not going to look at the future. All I know now is that at 6 o'clock, I'm going to be at a little delicatessen up on Broadway where they serve a mighty fine boiled beef dinner for 68 cents. And I'd better get going. Takes me almost an hour to walk it. Why don't I take the subway? Why, subways are for sleeping.
The CBS Radio Workshop is produced in Hollywood by William N. Robeson and was tonight directed by Mr. Robeson. Subways Are for Sleeping was based on the Harper's Magazine article by Edmund G. Love and was adapted for the workshop by Fran Van Hartesfeld. Henry Shelby was played by Byron Kane and the narrator was William Keneally. Also heard in the cast were Sarah Selby, Helene Burke, Edwin Bruce, Frank Gerstle, Court Falkenberg, Tony Barrett, Ted Bliss, and Alan Reed. The original score was composed and conducted by Fred Steiner. Next week, from New York, the workshop will present Only Johnny Knows, a survey of child training from the birds and the bees era of wonderful innocence a century ago to the complex and guilt era of today's psychiatric sophistication. Brilliant performance of the rarely played Symphony No. 6 in D minor by Jan Sibelius with Nils Erik Fugstad conducting the Sibelius Festival Orchestra is yours for the listening this Sunday when World Music Festivals comes your way on most of these same stations. Stay tuned for 5 minutes of CBS News to be followed over most of these same stations by My Son Jeep. America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
And There you have CBS Radio Workshop from August of 1956. Subways are for sleeping. At least that's what that radio play seems to think. As we wrap it for today's Radio Vault, of course, we'll do it again in another week. Don't forget the heavier mysteries and the detectives and the scary stuff. That all happens Sunday night. For Sunday Night Mysteries at 9 o'clock. But coming up in just a few minutes, we have got an encore presentation of Mountain Stage, followed by This Just In. Have a good week. We'll see ya. Listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. It's 1 o'clock.
There's a spring in the mountain, and it flows down to the town.
From NPR Music and West Virginia Public Broadcasting, with support provided by Bailey Glasser. Welcome to another Mountain Stage with our host, Kathy Matea.
There's a song in my heart, just a simple little tune. But the rhythm and the melody won't leave me alone. Around the world, it's just a simple song. This world is turning round a simple song.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello, and welcome once again to Mountain Stage, live performance radio for the mountain state of West Virginia. I'm Kathy Matea, and we are a little ways away from the mountain state today. We're coming to you from Kodak Hall at Eastman Theater here in beautiful Rochester, New York. Oh, yeah. We are at the Eastman School of Music. Our thanks to the